this is what we have here, everyone. Let me read it to you. The Democratic Coalition of Satan Worshippers thanks Governor Tim Walz for not standing in the way of spreading Satanism in the state capitol building. Satan has a special place for you.
While Christians are being slaughtered worldwide, over 4,800 martyred for their faith in the latest reporting period alone, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa's jihadist killing fields, not to mention the slaughtered Zoroastrians taking place in Iran, Don Lemon's stochastic terror rants, fueling the growing anti-Christian narrative, slide right on by in the land of the First Amendment, unchallenged by our Soros-embedded so-called justice system.
There's nothing in the Constitution that tells you what time you can protest. You can protest at any time. That's the whole point of it, is to disrupt, to make uncomfortable.
I think this DOJ, via Pam Bondi, who wears her crucifix, who will not ever address anybody's suffering, they have a problem with those types of white people being confronted and called out on their hypocrisy.
And there's a certain degree of entitlement. I think people who are, you know, in the religious groups like that, it's not the type of Christianity that I practice, but I think that they're entitled, and that entitlement comes from a white supremacy.
I have preached for many years that there will come a time when we'll find out who are Christians by label and by convenience and who are Christians by conviction. And certainly we're entering those days now. I believe we should pray for this congregation, and we should be vigilant as Christians to exercise our freedom to worship our Savior and to stand unashamed for the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Now the Eighth Circuit just unsealed those filings on arrest warrants tied to church invasions, where the judge's concurrence lays it bare. In this corrupted America, tainted Article III benches and Democrat urban jury pools stacked with Bolshevik sympathizers guarantee these church-disrupting, service-interrupting, child-frightening radicals will never face real justice.
The hypocrisy here is thick, and I would say that what we have here is a situation where rights were violated. Those rights need to be protected, and there is a law here that can be accessed to ensure those protections.
That's the nightmare we're living right now. This judge apparently sees storming a sanctuary, shattering worship, and terrorizing little kids as no big deal, not even illegal. But does the court of public opinion agree with what court filings revealed was said and done by the protesters? Quote, "Your parents are Nazis," end quote, was yelled directly in the faces of children while accusing parents of being Nazis who would burn in hell. Quote, "This ain't God's house. This is the house of the devil," end quote, was shouted by protester William Kelly. Accusations that the church was, quote, harboring killers, end quote, directed at the congregation. In the chaos, some protesters reportedly shouted, quote, "shoot," end quote, amid fears of guns, contributing to panic that felt like a, quote, "mass shooting," end quote, to one victim, as stairs were blocked to prevent parents from reaching Sunday school children. And now the DOJ has withdrawn its request for those five arrest warrants, including Don Lemon, following the appellate rejection.
What you witness Don Lemon do is churches, they target white churches because white churches are being told you got to be friendly and nice. You just got to look past and just love them. Love them. I love mine. Let me love your hands, oh Lord. Let me love your throat as I pray for you.
Amen. Don Lemon, don't come here. You roll up in this church doing stuff like that, and it's going to be the Royal Rumble.
Fake news magas are losing their mind over something that's not even true.
I'm trying to understand, what is it exactly that you are doing, and what is it exactly that you want us to think that you're doing? You are opposition to any and everything that is successful in this country. Anything that is trying to get this country together, you are in direct opposition of.
Americans are left twisting in the wind, struggling with the constant question, where do we go from here? John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health with Ultimate Turmeric Gummies. Inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this thing, get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, it's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this, Wednesday morning. Very glad to be back in The American Journal. Brenna Morello, of course, your regular host, is kept away because of the weather. They keep canceling flights on her. So I'm happy to fill in, happy to be back here in the comfy studio, the cozy studio. We have a lot to talk about today. A lot to cover, and we'll start with the attack on Ilhan Omar. In case you don't know, Ilhan Omar was viciously assaulted during a very suspicious attack during a town hall. During a town hall with Representative Ilhan Omar in Minneapolis on Tuesday evening, a man rushed the lectern and appeared to spray her with strong-smelling liquid before he was tackled by security. And we see it here. And, I don't know if anybody's buying this. I don't know if anybody is believing that this is a thing that really happened. I'll tell you right now, I'm a little bit suspicious for a couple of reasons. The man who had been seated directly in front of the lectern in the front row suddenly jumped up as Ms. Omar was speaking and ran towards the podium. He used a syringe to spray her shirt with a substance that smelled strongly of vinegar. I suspect it may have been vinegar. As he stumbled backward and pointed at her, a security officer tackled him to the ground, handcuffed him, and removed him from the room. Gasps were audible through the crowd, as well as cries of, oh my God. Some attendees yelled out, he sprayed something. A woman in the crowd appeared to be near tears. Minnesota police said the man, whom they later identified as Anthony J. Kazmierskek, or something, 55, was arrested and booked into jail on suspicion of assault. A forensic squad was called to analyze the scene. Ms. Omar, a Democrat who represents part of Minneapolis and has been a frequent target of President Trump, you know, because of all of the crime she's committed, held the town hall in the district of Minneapolis to address ongoing ICE operations in the city. Hours before, Mr. Trump criticized Ms. Omar at a rally in Iowa and repeated inflammatory remarks about her birth country, Somalia. He said immigrants have to show they can love our country, they have to be proud, not like Ilhan Omar. But of course, it was also announced yesterday that they would be looking into her finances. So that may be a little bit more pertinent than the offhanded remark from Donald Trump. It may have been the investigation into her sudden and unexplained rise from having less than $100,000 to $30 million, despite being a congresswoman with a salary less than $100,000. So it may have something to do with that. She may be using the Tim Walz approach, is when your fraud is about to be uncovered, stage an attack. That's essentially what's going on here. And there's some very disappointing developments when it comes to Minnesota and Minneapolis and fraud and ICE. But let's watch this. Let's watch this with the full. I don't believe. I'm sorry. No, I don't believe it. I just, and look. This is going strictly off of what I witness, what we see in the video. Let's go to the video with the audio so we can fully absorb what's going on here. But, you know, I'm always reminded of a time I was
I was dating my now wife, but it was in college. She was living with a bunch of roommates. And I walked into the house, and there was an argument going on. I could hear an argument happening in one of the back rooms. And my immediate thought was not, oh, my God, somebody's about to fight. There's so many people are yelling at each other. My first thought as I walked in the room is, sounds like somebody's rehearsing for a play. You know, because, like, if you walk into a room and you hear angry voices, actual yelling, like, on the verge of fighting, you feel it, right? You immediately, like, your adrenaline rushes, and you're like, whoa, what's happening? Somebody, like, something crazy is going on. But when you hear elevated voices sounding like they're angry, but it's just obviously fake, it's all this, but if I ever thought that you were gonna, and it's just like, ostensibly it's loud, it's angry, but there's just this falseness. It just rings hollow. Your immediate response is not, oh my God, what's going on? Who is somebody in trouble? It's what are they pretending to be angry about exactly? That's the sense I get from this video, is if it was real, I can't tell you exactly how it would be different. It would be very, very different if this was real. First and foremost is the fact that Ilhan Omar, like, starts to run at the guy like she's gonna punch him. No. I mean, at this point, I don't know if I have to explain it greater than that. I don't believe this for a single second. So let's watch the video with the audio so we can hear what the guy yells or whatever. Here's the vicious assault of the Vinegar Man against Ilhan Omar. Let's watch.
Impeachment.
I don't know.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. He sprayed something.
Oh my God. He sprayed something.
I need to resign or face impeachment.
Oh yeah. Look at the little glance.
Guillaume must resign or face impeachment.
And he sprays her something. He also, like, and she goes to punch him. Yeah, right. It's just such a lie. I'm sorry. I just don't believe it. I really, there's like 1,000 things about it. Subtle, but I think important that just makes me think, no, this just did not happen. Straight up. She also apparently just went back to giving the speech. Okay. I think we have a Jussie Smollett on our hands. Is that what the man was yelling? I couldn't quite understand him, but I think it's safe to say he was screaming, this is MAGA country. N-word. Something about the N-word, I'm sure. Now look. I guess I'll caveat this. Maybe this was real. Maybe. But, I mean, are we buying this? Are we really buying this? Maybe it was real. Maybe it was totally legit. Maybe this man, he just loves Trump and wanted to spray Ilhan Omar with some salad dressing for some reason. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I guess just on the face of it, what would be the point of a syringe full of vinegar? Why would this be something that you would risk jail time to accomplish? I mean, why would you not use an actually dangerous liquid? I'm not saying he should have. I'm not saying I'm mad that he's, but let's just think about this logically. You're going to assault a sitting congresswoman in public, on camera, at one of her town halls. And you're going to take this risk and commit this crime for which you know you're going to go to prison. And the best outcome you can get is she gets a little damp. You're doing this to make her damp. And she's going to have to change her shirt after this. So, you know, totally worth it. Now, if you're going to do something like this, you're going to actually do something. He wasn't actually doing anything. Okay, that would be the first illogical piece of this puzzle. This really does feel like Jussie Smollett, where it's like 2 a.m. in the winter in Chicago, and they recognized you, the white supremacists, are fans of Jussie Smollett, apparently. There's just, you know, I think the problem is some of these groups, they've adopted strategies I don't know if they fully comprehend. In other words, we're now being false flagged by idiots. I think this was a low IQ attempt at a false flag. And I'm just not buying it. Is that okay? Am I going to get sued for $10 billion? Or is it okay that I say, I don't believe Ilhan Omar got attacked unknowingly. I think she knew what was going to happen. Again, for a couple reasons. One, why would you not run away from this guy? I mean, that is the human reaction. And it's not about bravery versus cowardice. If some strange man charges at you and sprays something, I really don't care who you are, especially not if you're Ilhan Omar. Your first response is not to go act like you're going to punch him in the face, especially not if you're a politician who politicians go through training with their security. If anything happens, the first thing you do is duck and move backwards. But her first response is to ignore it until it happens. Almost smile, it looked like. No shocked look on her face. No, like, surprise whatsoever on her face. Are you kidding me? Look at that. No surprise, no shock, no concern even. She almost smiles when it happens. Okay, then if you're getting sprayed on, the first thing you're doing is being like, what the hell is this? And like trying to get your clothes off you or something. She's just like, doesn't seem to care about that. They apparently don't know what this liquid is at this point, right? According to the official story, she has just been mysteriously sprayed by an unknown person with an unknown substance. And her first response is not to like, literally just like take her shirt off immediately and try to get it as far away from her as possible. My first thought would be like, liquidized anthrax, like, again, if someone's going to assault a congressman on camera in full view of the press, you got to think this is something crazy. This is acid or something. She doesn't even wipe it off and apparently just goes back to giving the speech. I survived a war. No, you lost a war. That's why you're in this country. Yeah, you lost a war and had to run away, and now you live here. And I suspect, and based on my own personal observation, I have concluded that you are now false flagging the American people into thinking this happened. There's also, so we played the clip, the quick glance, clip number 12. So this is right before the guy stands up. Now, the fact that she glances up quickly, not suspicious. Okay, the suspicious part is that she glances right back down. Now, this is seconds before this guy gets up and attacks her. So what she looks up at is him readying the syringe. So you expect me to believe that she's giving a speech, she sees a little movement of the guy, looks up, sees that he has gotten a syringe out, and then just looks right back down. Nope, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. She also seems nervous, doesn't she? Again, I'm going off vibes here. This is an investigation based on vibes, but they've never steered me wrong before. I think we have a Jussie Smollett situation on our hands. And of course, he does it right as she's like, we should impeach Donald Trump. And they're like, and Trump insulted Ilhan Omar yesterday. They also apparently launched an investigation into Ilhan Omar and her $30 million net worth that seemed to have arisen out of the ether inexplicably during her time as a congresswoman. Quote, don't let the bullies win, Ilhan Omar says after attack, as Trump says he will de-escalate in Minneapolis. While Donald Trump suggested he would de-escalate operations in Minneapolis, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was attacked and sprayed with an unknown substance. And again, smelled like vinegar. We don't know what it is. But it looked like and smelled like and was vinegar, but we're not sure what exactly it was. We're forensically testing it right now. I have the feeling that it was vinegar. Why would he spray her with vinegar? Great question. It's a great question. Why would two MAGA supporters be walking around Chicago at 2 a.m. with a noose? You know, lots of questions with these mysterious attacks on Donald Trump's enemies. A man lunged towards her with a syringe and sprayed the politician before security tackled him to the ground. The alleged attack. I want to caveat, maybe it's real. If it is, still nothing happened, right? Worst case scenario, I'm laughing at Ilhan Omar because she got a little bit damp with some vinegar. She didn't get hurt. She wasn't actually attacked. Nothing actually happened here. I guess I'll caveat it by saying this could very well be true, but I'm picturing now the run up, the preparation, you know, like taxi driver or something, but instead of looking crazy, sweating in the mirrors, he's loading bullets into a revolver. It's him opening up a jar of vinegar and dipping in the syringe and preparing it as if he's going to go do something crazy, go commit an attack, but he's essentially doing something less dangerous, less offensive than a water balloon. All right, can we say that? Can we say what happened here is less, you know, of an attack than perhaps an afternoon in the backyard during the summer, throwing water balloons at one another? Just not blow this up out of proportion, okay? Let's remember what this is. A man has spritzed. She's been spritzed, folks. A man lunched. I'm sorry. I really can't take this seriously at all. Sorry. The alleged attacker, who'd been identified as a 55-year-old Minneapolis resident, has been arrested and charged with third-degree assault. Jail records identify the man as Anthony James Kazmierczak. Omar stepped towards the attacker before returning to the podium. She put her hand up like she's going to punch him. I mean, that is the funniest part. That's like the MAGA country part, that punch. Why? Why would you would only do that if you knew the guy only had a spritzer? Again.
Why would she go up on someone who's obviously got something that he could stab her with?
That's exactly my point.
And if you look at her when she kind of cocks back there, she's got a bent wrist,
I don't know if she's ever thrown a punch before in her life.
No, she has. She has. You could tell.
I know she has kids, but I don't want to accuse her of that. I'm amazed that they would try to claim that this is real. Does anybody believe this? I haven't seen it's a top story. They're making, a giant deal out of this. I wonder why. Of course, I do think Ilhan Omar was in on it. Again, I've got no proof. I'm going off vibes here. So I was going to say, things like this can be arranged without the knowledge of the person, sort of a wink and a nod type of thing. But yeah, why would you run at somebody? If this was a real attacker, imagine if this was a real attacker. And Ilhan Omar is assassinated because when the attacker got up and sprayed her with something, she decided to run at him and he stabbed her with a knife or something. She doesn't know. She doesn't know if he has a knife. She doesn't know if he has a gun. She doesn't know what she just got sprayed with. And you expect me to believe that her first response is to try to punch the guy. No. That's it. I'm done. That's the argument. Nancy Mace, I'm deeply disturbed to learn that Representative Ilhan Omar was attacked at a town hall today. Regardless of how vehemently I disagree with her rhetoric, and I do, no elected official should face physical attacks. This is not who we are. I agree. I don't think this is who we are. I don't think this was us, actually. I really don't. Omar, who was not injured in the attack, later posted on social media that she was okay, adding, I don't let bullies win. Grateful to my incredible constituents who rallied behind me. Omar stepped towards the attacker before returning to this podium to say, here's the reality that people like this ugly man don't understand. We are strong and we will stay resilient in the face of whatever they might throw at us. Okay. This at a time where she very well, according to her and by her knowledge, could be sitting there with acid burning through her shirt or poison, you know, seeping its way to her skin. But she's not concerned about that. She's going to get up and give a pre-prepared statement about whatever they throw at us. Representative issued the following statement. During her town hall, an agitator tried to attack the congresswoman by spraying an unknown substance with a syringe. Security in Minneapolis Police Department quickly apprehended the individual. He's now in custody. The congresswoman's okay. She continued her town hall because she doesn't let bullies win and because she wasn't concerned about what the liquid may have been. But why not? I would have gone to the hospital immediately if I was Ilhan Omar. Why would you not go to the hospital immediately? Why would you not immediately call the cops? Clear the place out. Like, what are we talking about? I think we're being false flagged by retards. I honestly. Hours before the attack on Omar, President Donald Trump criticized the congresswoman as he spoke to a crowd in Iowa, where he said his administration would only let immigrants who, quote, can show that they love our country. By the way, I think we have a video of this guy just like twitching and wriggling before the attack, before the assault on Ilhan. And he looks like he's playing a part. He looks like he is acting as insane as possible. I don't even know if I... Yeah, clip 8 here. Fat, dopey white guy straight out of Central Casting. Let's watch clip number 8 and see this guy acting insane. Which, again, he's chugged an entire bottle of Fiji water. I'm sure... I mean, he looks like the type of guy that spends $8 on a bottle of water, doesn't he? He hit up Whole Foods for his organic vinegar and a bottle of Fiji before committing a public assault on Ilhan Omar to achieve nothing. He's got his reading glasses on top of his head. Yeah. I mean, they put about as much effort into this as they did into covering up the Somali fraud. So, like, it kind of makes sense. Like, this is the false flag equivalent of the Leering Center, the Quality Leering Center. So, I mean, you know. Just sort of perfunctory, like nobody believes this. The left doesn't believe this, but they're going to pretend to. They're all going to watch this video and go, oh, my God. Oh, my God. MAGA is so out of control. We believe this. We believe you, Ilhan, just like we pretend to believe that the Somalis require $10 million to teach their children. Come on, guys. You got to put a little more effort into it. You got to make it look like a real daycare. You got to have kids there if you want to scam the country forever. And if you want the false flag to succeed, you got to not just spritz a lady with vinegar, okay? You got to commit. There have been days of unrest and international outcry over the Saturday shooting of 37-year-old VA nurse Alex Preti. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not getting any more information here. And the information that I do have has me firmly of the position that this is fake and gay. I think I'm going to go with a combination of both being fake and gay. So that's my take. That's my opinion here, allegedly. And, you know, don't sue me. The man accused has a reported history of sharing political posts, including one that criticized Omar on social media. Well, that's it. In 2021, he shared one political cartoon criticizing Omar's stance on security spending. And 5 years later, it all came to fruition. Oh, yeah, he's also friends with a bunch of, like, LGBT far-left activists. That's not suspicious, right? That's normal.
Now, this new product is incredible. It's from our sponsor, Bigly. At thealexjonesstore.com. Optimal Human, you love the green powder, super nutrient, the very best out there. Well, this is Optimal Human Nootropic called Mind Fuel. Introducing Mind Fuel, a super healthy, super strong energy nootropic adaptogen, which doesn't make you sick, doesn't have a letdown. It is incredible. Not just a few of the bottles. Look how many bottles are in there. And I only drink about half a bottle a day. It's so strong. Look at that right there, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what comes in each box of this. And it is simply amazing. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, no crash, no blood sugar spike, can be used daily without any guilt. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. It's also got all these other incredible compounds like citicoline, alpha-GPC, GABA, supports mental clarity and focus. It appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers. High-quality electrolytes and B vitamins. More than a brain shot, true functional fuel. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel, that's the name of the product, isn't just another energy product. It's a smarter alternative for consumers who demand clarity, control, and clean performance without compromise. Get 25% off for life when you become a subscriber, canceling time for free. Get Mind Fuel down at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you've never tried the original superfood greens, Optimal Human, you really want to get this as well. It's the best green food I've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool collectible knives and more. And that's what funds us, and that's what does this. And I really appreciate your support because I can't do it without you. So I want to commend and thank the listeners. But just like I steered you right on gold and silver 2.5 years ago, I got out of the market before that. I said, now's the time. I was totally right. Just like I steer you right on politics, these products are incredible. Get our ultramethylene blue. It is the best in the market. Our Shilajit is the best. Our Irish Sea Moss is the best. Our turmeric is the strongest. Ultimate Turmeric, thealexjonesstore.com. You are missing out. You don't get it. I want to thank those that have supported. I want to challenge those that haven't. What are you waiting for?
Just what I needed for my morning jog.
Working 12 to 13 hours a day, Mind Fuel keeps me on my toes and in the action.
Try this energy shot for a boost like no other. Power your mind and body today.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. And I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, Ilhan Omar survived the attack, the vinegar attack. There's got to be something there, right? Paul Newman strikes again. I don't know, what are some famous vinegar puns we could be making? I'm not taking it seriously, even in the slightest, so.
I think we need a chemical analysis to see if it was from Whole Foods or Walmart.
Yeah, we do. We need to see. What type of vinegar was it exactly? Maybe he was trying to clean her. Was he trying to clean her, perhaps? All right. We'll move on now to actual things that are real. We'll move on to things that actually have happened and are genuinely concerning. I really cannot take it seriously whatsoever. Although, I don't know, I really can't take anything seriously. I in a lot of ways, wish that I was Trump's enemy. So I'm not. I love Trump. I wish Trump would succeed. I wish he'd do what he set out to do. I wish his enemies would get out of the way, or I wish the people that worked for him would follow his orders every once in a while. I really do. But man, it seems really easy to be his enemy. and trick him. He seems very easy to trick. I think I would have a lot of fun tricking Trump if I was a bad person. Because everybody seems to do it. And he seems to not get it. And I don't understand. I don't understand. He puts out a Truth Social today, 1 hour ago, in which he says, surprisingly, he starts off with the word surprisingly. Okay. Just wait till what comes after, surprisingly. Surprisingly, Mayor Jacob Frey just stated that Minneapolis does not and will not enforce federal immigration laws. Are you surprised, Trump, at that? Or is that surprising to you? What? Why is that surprising? Because he lied to you once and you believed him? Why would you believe him? Why is it surprising? Every single day for the last month, he has come out and said that they won't work with the feds. What are you talking about? Why are you surprised at this? It's like you've got people like Mayor Frey who are just like, ICE is Nazis. We're going to charge them once, you know, we're back in power. They're Nazis. They need to get out. We're not working with the Fed. We're not working with the Fed. We're not working with the Fed. Trump has one call where he's like, oh, yeah, we'll work with the Fed. And Trump is like, great, problem solved. And then Frey just goes right back to saying what he was saying the minute before he was talking to Trump. And Trump is like, what? Shocked Pikachu face, y'all. Like, what? Why would you be surprised? Why are you surprised, though? That's what I'm saying. I mean, Putin does it. Democrats do it. Apparently Todd Blanche does it. Pam Bondi does it. You can just lie to Trump and he just believes you. It's crazy. It's crazy. You can just tell him. I mean, Jacob Frey, Tim Walz, they're in a state of active rebellion. They have declared independence from the federal government and are encouraging their followers to fight the lawful authorities in order to drive them out of their geographic location. You're in a civil war right now. I don't know. Did Abraham Lincoln, was he ever shocked that Jefferson Davis was like fielding armies? Was he shocked by this? Shockingly, Jefferson Davis says they're not going to give up the slaves. What? Yeah, dude. They're like going to war against you over this. They did not change their mind during your phone call. What are you talking about? Sorry, let's continue. Trump is shocked. He's surprised. This is, I mean, do we need to play Trump himself giving the scorpion and the frog speech, the snake speech, whatever speech he would give? You brought me into your bosom. You knew I was a snake. Surprisingly, the snake bit me. Surprisingly, the venomous serpent that I'd brought to my breast bit me in the heart and killed me. Surprisingly. Sorry, I'm triggered here. Surprisingly, Mayor Jacob Frey just stated that Minneapolis does not and will not enforce federal immigration laws. This is after having a very good conversation with him. Could somebody in his inner sanctum please explain that this statement is a very serious violation of the law and that he is, caps lock, playing with fire? No, he's not. No, he's playing with a squishy little slime ball. No offense. No offense, but he's playing with you like a toy. What are you talking about? Can somebody in his inner sanctum explain to Jacob Frey? What does Trump think that would look like? Jacob Frey tweets out or says or whatever, we will not be working with the Fed. Like, do you expect somebody in his inner sanctum to be like, wait, do you know that you're committing a crime? And Jacob Frey would be like, what? I did? When? And they're like, you're kind of doing an insurrection. He's like, no, but that's what they think I did? Oh my gosh, I had no idea. I'm so sorry. Let me call Trump and clear this up. You think he's going to realize he's, and again, it's just, I mean, this is just retarded. It really is. And again, this happens all the time. And then Trump goes out and complains about it, which the weird and shocking and confusing thing about this is like, why would you keep announcing that you've been tricked? like, what type of egotistical narcissist are we dealing with? I thought Trump was hyper concerned about his public perception, and especially concerning the appearance of strength. And yet he routinely comes out and is like, they got me again, guys. Bah. They got me again. They tricked me again. Putin said that he was going to stop bombing things. Guess what he just did? Bombing things. And I believed him and I trusted him fully. And he did it again. Okay. So you're just a fool. Okay, so you just keep getting fooled. You're very mad. The people who hate you, despise you, want to send you to jail, cut your head off. You're surprised that they would lie to you. Okay. This is the thing when people are like, oh, the Mamdani meeting was like 5D chess. I don't think it was. I think he gets tricked. I think he's easy to trick. I think it'd be very fun to be an enemy of Trump because you can just like give him a call and just be like, hey, Trump buddy, what's going on, man? I love ICE. ICE, the Immigration Customs Enforcement, those are my favorite guys. I love them. They're great. We're not going to get in their way. Why would we get in their way? You don't think I love America and want the best for the people here? Of course I do. All right. Talk to you later, Trump. Anyway, sue ICE now. Anyway, let's make sure we're still gathering the list for enemies to assault when he's out of office. And Trump, meanwhile, is just like, I did it. I got through to him. He changed his mind. He understands now. He understands. I talked to Jacob Frey, and he admitted he was wrong, and ICE is good, and he's going to start helping now. 10 minutes later, oh, what? Jacob Frey said that he would, but he just told me. Anyway, I just, it's embarrassing, it's pathetic, it's sad, and I'm hoping that instead of being encouraging, trying to convince Trump to do what's right, maybe we can just humiliate him into understanding that, like, these people are your enemies, the Democrats are evil, like, what are we doing? They tried to shoot you in the head. They tried to send you to jail for 700 years over laws that don't exist that they made up in order to get you. And he still thinks he can talk to these people. He still thinks it's like a misunderstanding. He still thinks that like they just need to be told by somebody in their inner sanctum what's actually going on. No, dude, you're the one that needs to be told by your inner sanctum what's actually going on. You are the one who is acting delusional. You are the one whose inner sanctum needs to sit down with him and say, you are being fooled over and over. You are facing an existential crisis and you don't seem to realize that. And that's extremely dangerous because you're in charge of the country, sir. Just crazy. And it just shows you how stupid Maduro was. He got his ass kidnapped. He could have just told Trump that, whatever he wanted. He didn't have to do it. Didn't have to be true. Trump will believe you. It's crazy. When it comes to Trump, the worst thing, like the thing you don't want to be is his friend, right? If you're his abject, like full-fledged enemy, his arch rival, you want him dead and his family grilled on a barbecue, and he will just like bend over backwards to help you. If you're his opponent, like you're kind of on the same side, but you disagree with him, you're a Lindsey Graham, Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro type. Red carpets, he's kissing your feet, even though you've done everything and you can, and the wily connivances to destroy him. And now you're standing next to him and he's, patting you on the head like a little dog. It's weird, man. It really is weird. Meanwhile, you're somebody like Alex Jones, who is the reason Trump got elected, has paid the price for it, immediately got hit with the insane lawsuits that have kept us basically under a wet blanket for the last couple of years. And it's like, you can't even get Trump to acknowledge it. It just, I don't know, man. It's weird. It's very weird. It's inexplicable to me. But one thing I think would really help, and I actually say this in total sincerity, We need civics education. We need education in civics. It's one of these things that, you know, maybe a decade or so ago, it's like, do we really need to put that much importance into, you know, drilling into kids' heads, like the exact meaning of different constitutional provisions or whatever? But like, you really see, if you don't constantly reinforce the meaning and purpose of our values, people do not understand them. And whether they are deliberately misconstruing them because they just don't believe in things like free speech and just want to use it as a weapon against people that do enjoy free speech in order to, you know, trick them into going along with their own destruction. Time to teach about civic literacy. Who's saying this? George Leaf, me and George are on the same page here. I don't even think I have that article. But, wait, this is good. I like this. Where's this from? I need this printed out. National Review. If students hear anything about the Constitution these days, they'll probably be told that it was written by racists to protect their power. Exactly. And so why would we be confused? Why would we be surprised when people in America think the First Amendment is evil? Think that it's some sort of trick by racist slave owners? Or thinking that the 10th Amendment just means whatever you want it to mean, whenever you want it to mean it? Yesterday on the War Room, I spent a long time just trying to explain the First Amendment. Democrats seem to think the First Amendment is the thing that allows you to, like, run up to a cop who's arresting somebody and try to physically stop them from doing so. They think that's the First Amendment. I don't know what they think it says. That's not what it says. It's not even remotely close to what it says. But they think it's First Amendment protected activity, what they're doing. It's not. Okay, there's nothing in the First Amendment that gives you the right to go blow out an officer's eardrum with a whistle when they're trying to put a rapist in handcuffs. That's crazy. That's not what the First Amendment is about. I think they think it is. I think they see, you know, Martin Luther King given a speech at the Lincoln Memorial and think it's like exactly the same as some dude running up to a cop in the middle of an arrest and trying to steal his gun. And they're like, free speech though. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you liked the First Amendment. I guess you're a hypocrite. What do you think the First Amendment says? What do you think the Second Amendment says? They don't know. They don't know. They don't care. Or they're like deliberately just, again, like I said, misconstruing it. Like, they actually don't believe in free speech. They know we do. Same way that non-Christians will use misconstructions, falsifications of Christian doctrine to convince you to do stuff. Again, it's just a useful weapon of theirs. It's not just the First Amendment or the Second Amendment that they deliberately misunderstand. Let's go to clip number 6 here. This is Democrat Governor Josh Shapiro saying he will invoke the 10th Amendment, which is not something you invoke, but Josh Shapiro, here he is.
To prepare for a federal onslaught where they would send troops in to undermine the freedoms and the constitutional rights of our citizens. Think about that for a moment. This is un-American. But I want the good people of Pennsylvania to know, I want the American people to know that we will do everything in our power to protect them from the federal overreach. There is such a thing as the 10th Amendment. I believe the federal government is violating that in Minnesota. We will stand tall and not allow them to violate it in Pennsylvania. We'll defend the people here, and we will stand up to this federal overreach.
I mean, again, it is impossible to argue with this, and we don't really need to argue with it. We really don't. Just like we don't need Jacob Frey to suddenly understand that what he's doing is wrong. They know what they're doing is wrong. Their acknowledgement of that is not a necessary prerequisite for their punishment. Do we not understand that? It feels like Republicans are trapped in a falsified delusion of their own where they have to get the Democrats to like, it's like they don't understand that it's possible that we can just impose things on them. Republicans genuinely act like we cannot do things without the Democrats' permission. We can't punish them if they don't admit what they're doing is wrong. And in fact, we can't punish them ever. What the Republicans want, crazy as this is, as wishful thinking, I mean, don't even begin to describe it. They want Democrats to accept that we've won the argument and then change their behavior on their own volition with no incentive, no carrot, no stick, just understanding and agreeing to go along with it. Why would you think that that was ever something that they would ever do? Like, what has ever given you the idea that they're capable of such a thing? Because it's not just that they want the Democrats to acknowledge that what they're doing is wrong and then they'll punish the Democrats. They don't intend to ever punish the Democrats. They think the only way to get Democrats to do what the voters want is to just continue to argue with the Democrats forever to try to convince them to do what the voters want. The voters voted for you. You are in power. You have the authority. You have to just do it. Is it even worth it to compare the quote unquote crimes of the Trump administration, for which like 57 people were arrested, from Trump himself to Peter Navarro to Steve Bannon to Roger Stone? And the idea, I'm like, it's not even worth comparing. Nobody in Trump's circle ever did anything like what's happening right now. And what's happening right now is nothing less than entire states softly withdrawing from the union. You know, it's almost like a corollary to how they figured out how to invade and destroy Europe. That like if you brought an army to Europe's doorstep, Europe had no problem in defeating it over and over and over for centuries on end. Armies would show up at the shores of Europe and they would be beaten back and destroyed. And so instead, they just sent the same armies, same people, same intentions, same desires, same ends in mind, only none of them had weapons. And it worked. And somehow it worked. Somehow, instead of saying, we're invading you, you know, on guard, if you just said, invasion? I'm not invading anybody. What are you talking about? And you just like brought in a couple hundred million people. And it just works. And it just, they did it. They achieved through duplicity and clandestine activity and deception what they could not achieve with all the armies in the world. And they're sort of doing the same thing here, where instead of just declaring that they're breaking away from the union, instead of doing the honorable thing like the Confederacy and just going, hey, you want us to do it, it's going to have to be war, staking their claim and seceding from the union, they're doing this thing where they're like trying to pretend that that's not what they're doing when that clearly is. And you have entire states now, entire state government apparatuses doing this fairly openly. You can add Pennsylvania to the list because it's not just their mayor, Jacob Frey, or Fry, or however you say his name, but it's also the attorney general. I believe that's who this is, right? And he's saying the same thing. He's the Philly DA. So he's the Philadelphia DA, Krasner, clip 23 here. He's going even farther. He's not just saying that the government won't work with ICE, even though they're supposed to do all this chaos that's been caused by them not working with ICE would all be over if they would just do what they're obligated to do by law, or if they don't do what they're obligated to do by law, that the Trump administration would then punish them for breaking the law. Like any of these would work. The only thing you can't do is nothing. The only thing that won't stop this is by just asking the people attacking you to stop. It's never going to work. What are we doing here? Let's go to clip 23 here. This is the DA of Philadelphia, Larry Krasner. And he's going even farther than just saying they won't work with him. They're going to throw the ICE agents in prison. Let's watch.
This is a small bunch of wannabe Nazis. That's what they are. In a country of 350 million, we outnumber them. If we have to hunt you down the way they hunted down Nazis for decades, We will find your identities. We will find you. We will achieve justice.
What do I even need to say anything? I mean, what are we doing here? That guy just is extolling his crowd to hunt down ICE agents like they're Nazis. ICE agents whose only action has ever been to arrest illegal alien criminals. Is this free speech? Is this the First Amendment? Like, what are we doing here? Because they mean it. You understand they mean it. You understand the Democrats are not Republicans. They're not cowards. They're not out there going, we are going to explain to ICE why what they're doing is wrong, and then acting surprised when ICE doesn't go along with it. They're going to get in power, and they're going to have a judge sign off on a warrant to go arrest an ICE agent. And ICE agents who are right now risking their lives to go arrest illegal aliens will be faced with the choice to either submit to a utterly biased and rigged jury under a judge who may just like default them outright, since that's apparently a thing you can just do now whenever you want. You just don't have the right to defend yourself in America if a judge just decides that, you know, what the way you respond isn't exactly precise or adequate. City prosecutors joined forces to bring charges against federal agents. You actually can't have this. What are we talking about? So those ICE agents are going to, you know, face whether they're going to go on the run or, I mean, what, they submit themselves to spend the rest of their lives in prison as a cop, as a federal agent who's been demonized. So the Trump administration, by not acting now, is essentially setting up the people working for him, setting up the agents carrying out his agenda to basically spend the rest of their life to dying in prison, to being murdered in prison, even though they never did anything wrong. And what, we're just going to wait until then? Like, this is what I don't understand. All of this stuff has the same trajectory. It all is on its way towards just a horrifying conclusion. And the longer you wait, the harder it is to stop. I'm blown away at the incapacity of the Trump administration to do anything about all of this insane insurrectionist activity. They haven't done anything.
I'm jacked up on the meth lane. Blue is the best thing you guys have ever had.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well.
And yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. I feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
About 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the ultimate methylene blue. Definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now.
I must say that it does a damn good job.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at TheOliveShowStore.com.
A little reintroduction for people on here who I am. So I'm Lucy Biggers. Right now I'm the head of social media for the Free Press. But for 5 years of my 20s, I was a climate activist. I interviewed Greta Thunberg. I've interviewed AOC. I pushed ideas like the Green New Deal, plastic straw bans, plastic bag bans, anything you could think of that is like the typical climate activist. I pushed those things for half my 20s. In that time, I got a lot of value from being part of the group. I identified as a climate activist, and I thought I was on the right side of history. And that these ideas were so important to push. Even during the time when I was really deep in the climate movement, I would have some questions like why we're protesting pipelines when, you know, the pipelines were already approved. Maybe we shouldn't have done that. Or the fact that, like, you know, oil pipelines are better for the environment and safer than transporting these materials on trains. Or, you know, the idea that plastic has a lower carbon footprint than glass and wood. Like, I would sometimes see these contradictory facts, but my ideology and identification was so tied up in the group that when I would see those things, I would push them away. That all changed when I left my last job where I'd been in a visible role as a climate influencer, and I lived through COVID and I had my first son. And I think those two experiences of living through COVID and seeing the entire world shut down, plastic proliferated everywhere, but it was like not a big deal. And then our carbon emissions only dropping by maybe 5%. Maybe it was like 20% at its peak, but barely making a dent in our climate emissions, even though the world was shut down. And that's when I started to think, what is the climate movement wanting from us? Because if they want to get our emissions down to zero, that would require destroying our way of life. Then I read a book, Apocalypse Never, by Michael Schellenberger, who's a former green activist, and then Steve Koonin, who's a scientist who worked for President Obama. He wrote a book called Unsettled, and it went into all the things that we don't understand about climate change. And it made me realize that this climate narrative, this black and white thinking that I was pushing, that climate change was an existential threat and that the world was going to be destroyed by it, was not true, and that the truth was much more complex. Learning all this stuff, I went basically radio silent for 5 years, and I took a job behind the scenes at the Free Press, where I'm the head of social media, and I basically thought I would never be in front of the camera again, because I did not want to go against the group of pushing against the climate change narrative. It's such an entrenched ideology, and there was just no upside. But then this past spring, my younger son, I now have two boys that are almost four and almost two, my younger son turned one, and I think if you're a parent, you can understand this, like, or especially a mom. It was almost like when my younger son turned one, I kind of had a little bit more time to think about what I wanted to do with my life and what my values were. And I realized, like, I did not want to be on my deathbed one day having regrets of sitting on what was the truth because of fear. Overall, what I think about climate change now is this, that climate change is happening if you define it as we're going through a warming period. We've actually been going through this warming period since the end of the Little Ice Age in the 1600s. Thomas Jefferson actually wrote about the climate getting warmer, which is a fun fact. You can look it up. Because we're coming out of Little Ice Age, so we've seen warming consistently for the past 400 years. And in the last 150 years, we've seen 1.3 degrees of warming, which has coincided at the same time with the most human flourishing the world has ever known. So I don't think that this idea that warming is bad for humans can hold up to any scrutiny if you look at it honestly. And then at the same time, we're also releasing CO2 into the atmosphere by burning fossil fuels, which is oil, coal, natural gas. And the increase in CO2, we've seen global greening go up by 15 to 20% in some areas. We've seen plants have better growing seasons because CO2 is a plant food, if you remember from biology class. And so this idea that CO2 is inherently bad, I also kind of call bullshit on, or I do call bullshit on. And I've, from this time, read a lot of climate realist and climate skeptic books and realized that there's a really healthy movement out there of climate skeptics who unfortunately have been censored and maligned. A lot of them have been kicked out of their jobs for reporting on the truth, and it's really sad. And so the goal with my content and my page is to help bridge the gap between this information that's out there in the climate skeptic realist community and then the more mainstream social media space, because I'm a social media person and I love to make things go viral. I love to talk on camera and make short-form videos. And so that's what my page is about. It's just spreading information that's already out there, but maybe you have not seen it because of your media sources. And ultimately, my biggest why is the young people, because young people have been taught this in school now for over a decade, if not two decades. if not more, honestly. And it's led to a mental health crisis. Young people are reporting having this sort of nihilism about their futures. They don't want to have kids. They're afraid. They think that modern society and capitalism, all these things, and fossil fuels, of course, are...
I'm not an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, Dakota Waylon Jennings.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour is on for The American Journal. We're going to continue to talk about what's happening in Minneapolis and all over the country as American states do the Civil War equivalent of quiet quitting. Quiet quitting where you just sort of stop working and just wait until it gets noticed. It's basically what they're doing now, but it's states across the country. And what they're doing is an insurrection. Like it's a civil war that they're starting. They just aren't like brave enough to admit that, I guess. And basically, if you don't tell the Republicans, if you don't tell the Republicans that you're attacking them, they like don't notice. But no, you can tell them. You can actually tell them. They still don't notice. You can actually let them. You can go, I'm attacking you. I hate you. I'm going to destroy you and your whole family. Once I get back into power, I'm going to charge you with a crime. I don't know what it is yet, but you're going down. And they're like, I think we could find a compromise, but I think we could compromise on this. It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. And the craziest part about it, this is the craziest part. It's not even popular. It's not even like they, you know, are being faced with this choice between like doing what's right and doing what's popular. Doing what's right is popular. They're still not doing it. The harder they go against immigration, the higher their poll numbers go. The more hardcore Trump was during the campaign about mass deportations, the better he did. We just heard the DA of Philadelphia claim they're going to go hunt down ICE, hunt them down one by one, like the Nazis after World War II, because there's a lot more of us than there are of them. Every poll done by every national outlet has shown an absolute majority of people want full, absolute 100% deportations. They want everybody that came in illegally deported, regardless of their criminal status or anything. Every single time, it is at least 55% of respondents say, yes, absolutely. We want that. We want the full deportations. So this is the crazy part, is like trying to figure out what is motivating the Republicans. They're not being motivated by the winds of political change because they're in contradiction to those winds. They are running against the wind. The wind from the Republican electorate is pushing them towards mass deportations, and they're resisting that with everything they've got. So they're not chasing political wins. They're not chasing like what's right and just doing what's right, regardless of how unpopular it is. They're not doing what's right. What doing what's right is what people voted for. What do they think is happening? What is their motivation for doing what they're doing? They are literally just helping the enemy 100% of the time. We've got the story here. House Republicans approve $315 million for NED, the National Endowment for Democracy. the organization that Victoria Nuland slimed her way over to after being disgraced as the Undersecretary of Defense. It's the George Soros arm of the government. And their entire purpose of existing is to undermine national sovereignty in countries overseas through the George Soros Open Society technique in order to foment regime change. They're a poisonous part of our government that should have never existed and at least should have been eradicated under Doge, should have been one of the first things Trump did. The Republican Congress just gave them $315 million for the year. And like everybody in NED is just an evil scumbag, far left is radical. And yet the Republicans are funding their pet project with $315 million. The House approved $350 million for the NED in fiscal year 2026, including H.R. 7148 that passed 341-88 on January 22nd, despite failed amendments from Representatives Thomas Massie and Eli Crane to eliminate it. Critics, led by former State Department official Mike Benz, highlight Castro's anti-Trump history and alleged pressure on social media, arguing the nonprofit, established in 1983 under Reagan, ensures policy continued beyond elections. Supporters emphasize its bipartisan roots and role in U.S. soft power against China, Russia, and Iran, with the bills now moving it to the Senate for expected approval under President Trump. Thomas Massie said, quote, I offered an amendment to zero out the $315 million to NED. I voted for Crane's amendment to zero out NED. When Crane's amendment to cut NED did not pass, I voted against the final bill, which contained NED funding. At every step, Republicans enabled NED to be funded. This in response to Mike Benz's post that says, Joaquin Castro was the impeachment manager for the Democrats. He vowed to prevent Trump from ever occupying the presidency again. Republicans just gave Castro $315 million to give out to his friends as director on NED's board, which manages NED's political black ops grants. Why can we not do anything? I get that we're not putting anybody in prison. I don't accept it. It's not okay. It's not justifiable. We don't need to stand for this. We don't require the authorities to get justice. It just is the preferable path. But can we at least stop funding them? I want these people, frankly, strung up for the treason they've committed. I want these people driven from our country like locusts, like a plague or something. Can we meet in the middle and not actively fund them with hundreds of millions of dollars of my tax money? Okay, you don't want to throw them into a furnace. I get that. You're cowards. You're scum. I understand. I'm grown to accept and internalize that. Can you not give them all of my money? Is that too much to ask? Is that really too much to ask? Oh, what the hell, you guys? Republicans, what do they think is happening? And again, what is driving them? What is motivating them, I ask you? Because right now, despite every Republican out there, including Trump himself, has gotten cold feet about immigration, has come out saying, well, I don't, it doesn't look good. Maybe we have compromise. Maybe we meet somewhere in the middle. And now they're down 2 points against generic Democrat in the polls. Democrats hold a 2-point lead over Republicans in generic midterm ballots, driven by stronger Gen Z, Black, and Hispanic support. According to Morning Consult poll, 49% of whites plan to vote for Republicans, while 39% plan to vote for Democrats. 50% of Hispanics plan to vote for Democrats, while 36% plan to vote for Republicans. But they're down. I mean, Republicans are down across the board because they're not doing what we voted for them to do. Why not? I could not possibly tell you. Let's go to clip number one here. This is Newt Gingrich trying to achieve that ultimate goal. The Xanadu of the Republicans is, can we just get back to the Bushes? Can we just get back to a time before Trump started actually representing the real desires of average Americans? Can we get back to the neocon Mitt Romney, John McCain style of capitulation. They just are so desperate to ease back into that comfortable. It's like the worn spot on their sofa. It fits them perfectly. They just want to ooze back into that comfortable hot tub of inaction, inactivity, getting to talk about fiscal responsibility while just giving the Democrats everything that they want. They were so happy back then. Of course, our country is being sold out from under us, and the left has gone insane, and they apparently are just incapable of changing with the times. Incapable, unwilling to even recognize what's happening around them, let alone rise to the occasion. They just, like slugs, want to dissolve back into the morass. And I hate them. Let's go to clip number one. Newt Gingrich. We have to open up a national dialogue about immigration like we didn't have a goddamn election last year. The year before. Let's watch.
The president has to, in a sense, open up a national dialogue. Everybody agrees, not everybody, certainly a vast majority agrees that we want to control the border. A vast majority agrees that if you are a genuine criminal, then we should get you out of the country. They don't have to have murderers, rapists, drug dealers, gang members in the United States, period. But I think as a country, we believe, to quote Congresswoman Salazar, who said, you know, this is about dignity. Americans don't want to see the police behaving like a mob. Americans don't want to see people killed in the streets. And Americans don't want to see the kind of hunting down people in a way that, really demeans the process. So I think there are two things. We need a national conversation about what we're going to do about people who've come here, some of them 20 years ago, who've been obeying the law, paying taxes, good neighbors, have kids, go to PTA. Very few Americans want to see the police walk in and pick them up and, deport them. On the other hand, people do not want to give them citizenship. So there should be some middle ground here on, long-term goals. Second, the ICE police, who I'm totally for, and I do not believe state and local governments have the right to interfere with federal officers in the pursuit of legal policies, and these are all legal, I think that they may well need more training, a little more restraint. I used to talk with British officers and soldiers who have been patrolling Northern Ireland, where you really had a difficult problem.
Jesus Christ, what is he talking about? All right, take him down. This is ridiculous. Okay, the middle ground is they can go home. The middle ground is we will pay them $1,000 to go back to their homelands where they're citizens, where they have governments that represent them, where they were born and raised, and where their family is. They can go home. And we give them $1,000. That's the middle ground. The middle ground is if they don't go home, we pick them up and send them home. That is an extremely merciful offer. I don't think we should make them that offer. I think if you really want to solve immigration, it's unbelievably simple to do. You say, go home, we'll give you $1,000 and a free flight home. Don't go home, and you will be sentenced to 5 years of hard labor. Not deported, sentenced to prison for at least 5 years. We're going to make you work. You're going to be out in the field breaking your back for 5 years, and then we send your ass home and you're never coming back. Or you can choose on your own volition to go home right now. You get $1,000 and you can come back whenever you want. You just got to do it the right way. Or 5 years hard labor, work camp, sent home, never allowed back. That has to be the option. Not a middle ground, not a path to citizenship, not temporary citizenship so all of their children and all of their family become citizens in a de facto manner. How about we already had this conversation? Like, what are we talking about? It's time to have a national conversation. For the last 10 years, the national conversation has been the people of America demanding that the foreigners in our midst be expelled from our country and everybody in power waffling and pretending that that's not possible, pretending that that's an impossible thing to request. just like they pretended that they couldn't stop the flow into the country. But then Donald Trump did it in an afternoon with a single signature. They could do the same thing with deportations. They're just not doing it. These absolutely feckless cowards. I really go away. They need to go away forever. Newt Gingrich had his heyday when I was 2 years old. It's time for you to go away forever, Newt, and let new blood come in who are not trapped in a mindset informed by the 1970s and 80s, okay? Just insane. We got to have a national conversation about immigration. We did. It's called the election. Donald Trump won with a mandate for mass deportations. We have gotten less deportations this year than Obama had, maybe even than Biden had, believe it or not. The middle ground is deportations. If this was a natural law kind of situation, murder would not be out of the question. Like just rounding them up and kill. I mean, they are invaders. They are foreign occupiers. They do not belong here. And I think we're in a state of war with their countries anyway. So the middle ground is politely expelling them. It's actually too much on their side already. Now, I understand Marco Rubio is going to testify to the Senate today, and apparently that's happening. Is he live right now? All right, let's go to Marco Rubio here.
And so with that, Secretary Rubio, welcome back to the committee. Love to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I'll be brief in my opening statement so we can leave more time for questions. I've submitted a written statement, but I'm not going to use it. I'm just going to talk to you guys for a few minutes. And
all right, here we go. Suspend. You know the drill. Off to jail.
That's a war crime.
That's a one-year ban from the committee. Anyone who is a persistent violator will be banned for 3 years. So don't know whether the guy falls in that category.
Why didn't that happen to Fanon? Fanon interrupted proceedings multiple times.
Productive means of employment. Secretary Rubio, we have two hearings a week, you know. You seem to have a more robust following than most of our witnesses that come before us. But anyway,
there'll be a couple more. So thank you for stopping the clock. But I appreciate it. So. And I know there's a lot of other topics you're going to ask me about, so we can talk about those, including the ones that Senator Shaheen just outlined. But let me just talk about Venezuela in particular.
Please.
I think we can talk, if you want. I'm sure your questions will be about what happened before and led up to in the operation. I want to focus my comments this morning on what happens now and moving forward, because you're going to ask about the going back. And let me just say this. What is our goal going in? We had in our hemisphere a regime operated by an indicted narco trafficker that became a base of operation for virtually every competitor, adversary, and enemy in the world. It was, for Iran, their primary spot of operation in the Western Hemisphere was Venezuela. For Russia, their primary base of operation in the Western Hemisphere, along Cuba and Nicaragua, was Venezuela. In the case of China, China was receiving oil at a huge, about $20 a barrel discount. And it was, they weren't even paying money for it. It was being used to pay down debt that they were owed. This is the oil of the people of Venezuela, and it was being given to the Chinese as barter at a 20%, at a $20 discount per barrel in some cases. And so you had basically three of our primary opponents in the world operating from our hemisphere from that spot. It was also a place where you had a narco-trafficking regime that openly cooperated with the FARC and the ELN and other drug trafficking organizations using their national territory. It was an enormous strategic risk for the United States, not halfway around the world, not in another continent, but in the hemisphere in which we all live. And it was having dramatic impacts on us, but also on Colombia and on the Caribbean basin and all sorts of other places. It was an untenable situation, and it had to be addressed. And it was addressed. And now the question becomes what happens moving forward. As I've described to you in previous settings and in individual conversations, we had three objectives here. The final, I'll work it backwards because the end state here is we want to reach a phase of transition where we are left with a friendly, stable, prosperous Venezuela and democratic, in which all elements of society are represented in free and fair elections. By the way, you can have elections. You can have elections all day. But if the opposition has no access to the media, if opposition candidates are routinely dismissed and unable to be on the unable to be on the ballot because the government, those aren't free and fair elections. That's the end state that we want. Free, fair, prosperous, and friendly Venezuela. We're not going to get there in 3 weeks. It's going to take some time. And so objective number one was stability. In the aftermath of the removal of Maduro, the concern was what happens in Venezuela. Is there civil war? Do the different factions start going at each other? Are a million people crossing the border into Colombia? All of that has been avoided. And one of the primary ways that it has been avoided is the ability to establish direct, honest, respectful, but very direct and honest conversations with the people who today control the elements of that nation. Meaning the law enforcement, the government apparatus, et cetera. And one of the tools that's available to us is the fact that we have sanctions on oil. There is oil that is sanctioned that cannot move from Venezuela because of our quarantine. And so what we did is we entered into an arrangement with them. And the arrangement is this. On the oil that is sanctioned and quarantined, we will allow you to move it to market. We will allow you to move it to market at market prices, not at the discount China was getting. In return, the funds from that will be deposited into an account that we will have oversight over. And you will spend that money for the benefit of the Venezuelan people. Why was that important? Venezuela was running out of storage capacity. Okay, they were producing oil, they were drilling oil, they had nowhere to put it. They had nowhere to move it. And they were facing a fiscal crunch. They needed money in the immediacy to fund the police officer, the sanitation workers, the daily operations of government. And so we've been able to create a short-term mechanism. This is not going to be the permanent mechanism. But this is a short-term mechanism in which the needs of the Venezuelan people can be met through a process that we've created where they will submit every month a budget of this is what we need funded. We will provide for them at the front end what that money cannot be used for. And they've been very cooperative in this regard. In fact, they have pledged to use a substantial amount of those funds to purchase medicine and equipment directly from the United States. In fact, one of the things they need is dilutin, depending how you want to pronounce it. And that basically is the light crude that you need to mix with their heavy crude in order for the oil to be able to be mixed and moved. They used to get 100% of that from Russia. They are now getting 100% of that from the United States. So we're using that short-term mechanism both to stabilize the country, but also to make sure that the oil proceeds that are currently being generated through the licenses we'll now begin to issue on the sanctioned oil goes to the benefit of the Venezuelan people, not to fund the system that existed in the past. The second is a period of recovery. And that is the phase in which you want to see a normalized oil industry. Again, we've got plenty of oil. There's plenty of oil all over the world. Canada produces heavy crude, so it's not like Venezuela's oil is unique in that regard, despite the fact they have the largest known reserves in the world. It's not irreplaceable. But we understand that that is the lifeline. Their natural resources are going to allow Venezuela to be stable and prosperous moving forward. And so we created what we hope to do is transition to a mechanism that allows that to be sold in a normal way, a normal oil industry, not one dominated by cronies, not one dominated by graft and corruption. To that end, The authorities there deserve some credit. They have passed a new hydrocarbon law that basically eradicates many of the Chavez-era restrictions on private investment in the oil industry. It probably doesn't go far enough to attract sufficient investment, but it's a big step from where they were 3 weeks ago. So that's a major change. We can address some of the other components, but I'll run out of time. But one of the parts of the transition phase, or the recovery phase, is beginning to create space for different voices inside of Venezuelan politics to have an ability to speak out. Part of that is the release of political prisoners. By some estimates, up to 2,000. They are releasing them. They are releasing them probably slower than I would like them to, but they are releasing them. And in fact, you're starting to see some of the people being released beginning to speak out and participate in political life in the country. We have a long ways to go. Look, we can talk in more detail about all of these things. Suffice it to say, I'm not here to claim to you this is going to be easy or simple. I am saying that in 3.5 weeks.
Live right now in front of the Senate talking about the raid on Venezuela. We'll keep an eye on that, bring any interesting questions. More on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
Every guest I have had in studio in the last 6 months, I've given our medical grade USP methylene blue tube. I don't even tell them what it's going to do. I just say, here, take this, see what happens. Within 15 to 30 minutes, every guest says they've gotten energy like they've never experienced. Clarity, focus. It's like a fog has lifted. Their critical thinking goes to the next level. And that's what the science shows it does in our cells. It's not a stimulant, but it has that effect because it electrochemically turns up the literal electrochemical electricity in the body. And so he was here a few months ago, didn't know what it was, know me for a long time, said, sure, he'll take it. He heard Kennedy talk about it, RFK Jr. He took it, and it was so game-changing. In the last few months, he ran out of the bottle I gave him, so he wanted more. And the first thing he wanted was to take some more before we even went live on air. That's how amazing this is. You want to do the plug, and I appreciate this.
I do. I came in.
Because you came in saying, I want more Methylene Blue, and then I looked over when you went on the air. You'd already slurped some down. Your mouth was blue. I said, you're Papa Smurf. So, Patrick Byrne.
How much is the correct amount to put in? About that much?
Yeah, Kennedy does three droppers. This is really strong.
You gave me some last time. I think you gave it on air. You totally feel the difference. I used the bottle you gave me. It's great. It totally makes it. You can feel it. It just keeps your energy level up and plateaued without bonks. So I love it. I used the bottle you gave me, and I came back to Austin just to pick up this pump.
Well, you can always get it at theologyshow.com, but we'll certainly give you all you want. We also have the capsules, but we have the strongest medical grade. It's super good for you. It cleans out your mitochondria. Most people get instant energy, like 99% of people, but it's the workout. It's what it does for your skin, your libido. So you've been on it a few months.
I just had that one bottle, but...
And you're saying no letdown. That's the best part. It's not an amphetamine. It's not a speed, but it feels like that.
I see RFKs on it. Yeah. I just used up that bottle, and so for a couple of weeks, I had this great energy, but it's not speed. It's not caffeine. It's nothing like that. It's doing something else for you. So I really...
Well, it skips three levels of the oxygenation process in the cells. It's just next level. It's incredible. And they've suppressed it. And my medical doctor 6 years ago said, get on it. And I said, get USP grade. It didn't do anything. And then our sponsor got this super strong one. I'm like, oh, let me try it. Whoa. I mean, it funds the operation books. But I'm telling you, if you haven't gotten our USP grade, real USP grade, Ultimethylene Blue, theoxygenshore.com, you are missing out. It is so good for you. 99% of people, it's more than that. Like, I've given it to like 400 people, maybe two or three didn't feel it. Some get totally freaked out that they're going crazy. So talk to your physician first. Take a very low dose the first time. You can't take it from SSRIs and other things. It is amazing. TheAlexShow.com. So,
yeah, it's not psychosomatic. It's not psycho. You feel it. You feel it.
Well, I didn't tell you what you were going to feel. How fast did it kick in, and what did you feel?
I felt it by the time, the end of the show. By the time I got, the last time I was here, I felt it probably by the end of the show or by the time I got my car. You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus. It's probably like why you are as intense as you are, Alex.
It's made me more intense. Well, I was taking full doses at first. And then working out so hard that, you know, I had to go.
You look jacked.
Well, I've cut back. The point is, I only take it every 3 days now because it's crazy. Everything we sell, I want is working and is good. That's what I want. I mean, I'd be like a restaurant. I'm going to serve dog to people. They're not going to come back. But I mean, this thing is the most dramatic, quick acting, and it's good for you. It's just insane. And if I could just get a few more percentage of the audience to buy it, all our problems would be solved. Patrick Byrne was totally blown away by it, as every other guest we've given it to has been blown away.
Listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. By the way, let me tell you about a sale that we have on right now for the new product, Mind Fuel Nootropic Energy Shots. You get a free bottle of Atomic Defense when you try our new product, Mind Fuel, that I was saying yesterday, if you're watching the War Room, We have to tell the crew we're not allowed to drink these. We need to keep these, fully intact so we can, you know, film these cool B-roll shots of them or, you know, show them on the show if we're trying to plug them. We have to stop drinking them because within 24 hours, these things arriving in the office, half of them were gone because we actually sell you things that we like ourselves and we wouldn't do otherwise. It's caffeine-free nootropic energy shot, clean, fast-acting liquid formula, smooth, great-tasting formula people actually enjoy drinking, and that is true. I'm sure if you've ever tried energy shots and you tried some of the name-brand ones, they often taste like chemicals, not Mind Fuel. Mind Fuel tastes like, I don't know, punch? It's good. It actually tastes very, very good. And it doesn't have high caffeine, doesn't have any caffeine, but caffeine is often used to
you know, cover up the ineffectiveness of other compounds. But we don't need caffeine because we have the real deal. We have the good stuff. It provides clean mental energy without jitters or crashes, improves focus, clarity, and mental drive, helps support sustained performance when reading, thinking, or going live on air, keeps you feeling alert, calm, and in control, not overstimulated. Because there's no caffeine, there's no dependency and no spike and crash cycle. Works for everybody, not just gym users or STEM junkies. Easy to take, easy to talk about, easy to feel. It's a true secret weapon for mental performance under pressure. And there's also massive discounts on a lot of other products like Bovine Colostrum Plus. CMOS capsules and gummies, turmeric and ultimate burn are all 40% off right now. But Mind Fuel Nootropic is our new product, guaranteed to become a bestseller soon. Get yours while you can. Sign up for regular deliveries and you get a even bigger bonus. And no matter what you purchase from the Mind Fuel Energy Shot, you get a free bottle of Atomic Defense. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. So let's get back to immigration. By the way, I'll be joined in the next hour by Carlin Borashenko, who's a very good investigator of the left. She basically infiltrates things like the Signal chat that was revealed by Cam Higby. She's in all of the leftist Zoom meetings and records them and shows what they're planning and what they're talking about, and probably has a better grasp of what leftists in America actually think and are actually planning on and what their intentions are. She probably has the best view out of anybody I follow. And then we'll be joined by Del Bigtree to talk about vaccines and the successes of the MAHA movement. So very big third hour. We'll finish out this hour with a few more videos about what the hell's going on in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and elsewhere across the country. And it really is all over the place. You've got the Pennsylvania governor basically saying that they're in a state of insurrection, as well as the DA Larry Krasner there saying that they're going to go after ICE agents. And actually, let me do this, because I just put a video in there, because I keep hearing this assertion that's not true. It's just not true, and it's coming from both sides. We just heard the DA for Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, say, you know, we outnumber them massively. Like, it's not even close, right? This tiny number of ICE agents versus everybody else in America. That's not really the division, because over half of America supports ICE. Then you have Newt Gingrich saying, look, you know, people want the criminals expelled, but, you know, people don't really have a stomach for the people that have been here and been law-abiding visitors for the last little while. And that's just not true. That's not true. Period. Why do they keep saying it? Because what we're experiencing right now is a con, right? These are con men. The con in con men stands for confidence, right? Their entire agenda depends on confidently asserting that they are the majority, confidently asserting that everybody's on their side and only the fringe losers would stand against them. It's all a confidence game. It's all a lie. It's all an illusion to convince the weak-willed that they're going along with the majority position, that they're safe in the crowd and that the tribe is all going this way. It's a lie. It's a trick. But it's a self-fulfilling thing, because if you can convince everybody that everybody believes this and then they go along with it because they think everybody believes it, then everybody will start to believe it. And then the lie becomes true. So I want to dispel this. I want to show you, not from our sources, but from CNN, bastion of the left, even they admit, no matter who's asking the question, no matter how it's phrased, all across the country, the polls show the same thing. People don't just want criminals expelled. They don't just approve of ICE. They want every single illegal alien deported from this country as rapidly as possible. Every single time, this is what's shown. Let's go to the clip.
Yeah, sometimes I like blunt questions because they sort of get at the underlying feelings that people have. So this is about as blunt a question as you can get. Deport all immigrants here illegally. I will note the ABC News poll asked about undocumented immigrants. So we have slightly different questions, but these were all taken within the last month. And there's real uniformity here. That's what I really think you see. You see real uniformity. Deported all immigrants who are here illegally, 55% of the New York Times. Marquette, 64%. CBS News, 57%. ABC News with a slightly different question, 56%. So what you're seeing essentially here is a very clear indication that a majority of Americans, in fact, when they're asked this blunt question, which I believe gets at the underlying feelings, do in fact want to deport all immigrants who are here illegally. There's no arguing with these different numbers because they're all essentially the same across four different pollsters. Feelings towards immigration in this country, feelings towards undocumented immigrants and deporting all of them have become considerably more hawkish. And I think that gives Donald Trump much more leverage to go with the American people and sort of have these hawkish, some might say harsh.
So again, this is the crazy part. This is the crazy part. The support for deporting undocumented illegal aliens has gone up year over year. It is the majority view at this point, over 55%, no matter what poll you go by, something like 60% or more of Americans want people deported, want everybody deported. And by the way, out of all of the chaos that's occurred in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and all the hatred against ICE, their poll numbers have gone up. You know, approval ratings for Border Patrol has risen 3 points in the last 3 weeks. So why is Newt Gingrich and all these other dumbass old school neocon Republicans pushing the lie that this is unpopular, that we've got to come to some sort of compromise, that, you know, the optics of this aren't good? Yes, they are. They're good. No, they're very good. They would be even better if you would actually enforce the law. And I'm not the only one saying this, and I'm not even saying it to the degree that a lot of people are saying it. Did I put that video in of Asmongold? I must have missed that one. I'll grab the video of Asmongold because he goes even farther than I do, but I think he's exactly right. And he's basically saying these people need to be charged with treason because they're committing treason. Is this a complicated concept to capture? They're committing treason. They're all awful. They're all murderous scum, or at least in support of murderous scum. And I'm not exaggerating, y'all. I mean, they'll call ICE Nazis. Why? Because people are being arrested? Okay. Nazis drank water and ate bread, so I guess we can't do that anymore. Like, it's absurd. But when I'm talking about the leftists, I'm not speculating. I'm not asserting. I'm not projecting anything on them. Listen to them and believe what they say. They are telling you what their intentions are. We played a video on War Room yesterday of a woman talking about going door to door and basically demanding that MAGA red hats, you know, admit that they were wrong. And if they refuse to, you know, condemn Trump, but these people don't believe in forgiveness. So just know, like, when they say we're going to go door to door looking for MAGA supporters after this is all over, do you think they're kidding? Do you think they're not serious? Of course they're serious. And these riots are, I mean, it's just so crazy because in any normal situation, you would never do something like this. Like, if you're really trying to start a civil war, if you really have plans to, like, overthrow the country, which these people do, obviously, and they talk about it all the time. If you were, like, really doing something that the authorities were opposed to, you would never do it like this, because what this actually is if we had a real authority in this country, this is an amazing opportunity to shut this down before it ever even begins. You could so easily strangle this insurrection in its crib right now and put an end to it. Like, it's stupid for them to be doing it like this if we had a real government that actually wasn't just being, you know, weaponized for its own destruction. But we don't. So instead they get to just, like, announce their plans. I mean, we know, and we'll talk about this with Carlin Borishenko especially. She's, like, the only other person online that seems to even recognize what's happening. Like, this is the craziest thing. There are certain things that, like, I talk about on the show or I'll tweet about on X, and it's just like nobody cares. for years. And then eventually, you know, it gets picked up, like the Chinese fishing fleets. If you're a viewer of American Journal, you know we were talking about that years ago and saying the same thing, going, why does nobody care about this? This is insane. This is like, should be the biggest story ever. And nobody will share it. Nobody will look at it. Nobody cares. Now people are looking at it and caring and, you know, but it's been 2 years of this and there's still not enough, you know, concern that's warranted by the genocide of our oceans that's being carried out. Totally insane. But this is another one. There's another one just like this where it's like, there is a plan right now. People involved are talking about and organizing for the leaders of the biggest unions in the country, including the UAW, United Auto Workers Union, which has a bunch of teachers unions and a bunch of other ones in it, represents millions of people, has budgets of tens of millions of dollars. They're collaborating with and orchestrating with every other leader of every other major union in this country. They all intend to go on strike on the same day in 2028. On May 1st in 2028, they plan to shut down the entire U.S. economy and not open it up until they get what they want, which is a total socialist reorganization of the government. Now, they're planning this. They're explaining this. They're organizing for this. They are carrying out training, you know, seminars to train people how to get jobs in places that have unions in order to bolster the union numbers, or how to organize to create unions in companies that don't yet have unions, or union reps and people in companies are deliberately giving jobs to people who they know are communists along with them and are getting the jobs specifically just to join the union to participate in this mass strike that they're already doing practice runs for, that you'll see if you start looking for them. Starbucks had a strike last week by these very people because they announced we're doing little testing, little trainings for this, why everyone should be preparing for May Day 2028. So it just feels like, you know, me and Carlin are sitting up on a ridge watching a train drive full speed at a brick wall. It's not going to arrive for 2 years. And we're going to spend the next 2 years going, why does nobody care about this? Why are we not stopping this right now? They are planning a communist revolution in 2028 on May 1st. We know the date that they're planning to overthrow the U.S. government and replace it with a communist structure. They're announcing it. They're planning it. They're organizing it. They're going to do it. Nobody on our side seems to care. Why? Why does nobody care? Why are we not stopping this? Why, when they're like raising an attack dog and they're like, this puppy here one day is going to be a giant dog that's going to bite your throat out. Maybe we just stomp on the dog. Maybe we just like take it out while it's a puppy. Maybe while they're still in the planning phases, while it's still this nascent infant of a revolution, we can snuff it out immediately, easily, when they're openly committing treason, when they're talking about what they're planning to do and then they're doing those things, when they're on signal chats with people in the local government, coordinating with the local police to access, you know, license plate databases to provide information to their thugs on the street so they can go attack James O'Keefe. Why are we not putting all of these people in prison? Because if we don't, what do you think is going to happen? You think it's going to fizzle out? Think they're just going to decide they're going to do something better? Oh, maybe if we capitulate, maybe if we give them half of what they want, they'll be satisfied. Are you all idiots? These are our enemies. They are an enemy army. They are communist revolutionaries that are working out in the open to overthrow the United States government. And the United States government is doing nothing. Which sucks because they're supposed to be our team. When you look at Minneapolis, when you look at Minnesota and you see the tens of thousands of people on the street calling for ICE to be destroyed, calling for America to be destroyed, burning the American flag, that's their team. Our team are supposed to be the cops that roll in, tear gas them, flashbang them, arrest them, throw them in prison, and deport the ones that aren't supposed to be here. That's supposed to be our team. We're America. Our government is supposed to represent and protect us and our interests. But they're obviously not. So I guess the only question now is, what do we do about that? Because barring any major change in their trajectory, I think at this point, the only thing happening from the Republican side is that they're playing their role to stop any grassroots response. They're basically there going, hey, we're in charge. We're handling things. Don't worry. Jacob Frey is playing with fire. He'll see. You know, they'll justice will come. You just wait. And the more we wait, the longer shot it becomes, the less likely it becomes that we ever achieve any real victory. And again, just to reemphasize, I'm not just saying the leftists are crazy because they think men are men and women are women. That's just an expression of their insanity. The true heart of their insanity is a vicious, vile, poisonous hatred for decent, normal, happy people. And there's nothing you can do to assuage this rage and anger. You just have to fight it and destroy it. Can we please, just for the love of God, recognize this and accept it? Your survival depends on it, Republicans. Let's go to clip 30 here. This is a voicemail that a liberal, someone who loves liberty, a liberal wrote left for an ICE agent. And they'd gotten his information from one of the numerous doxing organizations operating right now in partnership with local authorities to dox agents for this exact purpose. Why are they allowed to do this? You tell me, because the Republicans are in on it unless you have a better suggestion. These are the types of people that we're talking about leaving voicemails for ICE officers who are just regular dudes doing a job that is necessary for the function of a government. So this is what they think about you. Let's watch.
You're a f***ing fascist pig. You should f***ing kill yourself. I hope your wife dies. I hope your mom and dad die. I hope everything wrong that could go in your life happens. You should kill yourself. You're f***ing disgusting. I hate you. Everyone hates you. You're a f***ing murderer. And all of your friends are f***ing murderers.
Your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction to that is, yeah, well, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do about it? I mean, I know it's, you know, he sounds very gay, but what are you going to do about it? DHS shares obscene threatening voicemail sent to ICE agent blaming local polls for incitement. Yeah, no, that it is their fault. They are inciting violence against you. Very openly, not even, I mean, the DA of Philadelphia is saying, let's hunt down ICE, they're Nazis. I think that's called incitement to violence, but he's allowed to do it. He's getting away with it, which is signaling to everybody else that it's acceptable. Because if the DA can say that and he's celebrated for it, then why wouldn't everybody else feel that way and say that stuff and do those things? Why not? Why wouldn't they? Apparently it's fine now. Apparently you can do that. Apparently the people of the United States have no problem with it either, which is probably the most depressing part of it. That people who, you know, despite apparently, and it just is exhausting with these freaking people. It really is exhausting with these people. I mean, how many times we've been through this exact situation where they're talking about Donald Trump is going to get, going to try to get vengeance. He's going to weaponize the DOJ while they're trying to send Trump to prison, while the DA of New York got elected by saying, I'm going to send Trump to prison for something. I'll figure it out once I'm in office. They really don't care. And you've got this DA, like, if Republicans did anything even remotely close to this, but it just is exhausting saying that over and over. We all know. We all know this. Then you have this. Arizona Democrat Party official exposed as local realtor after harassing young women for taking photos with ICE. You little effing C's, you, I mean, I'm not even going to say it. But this guy's an Arizona Democrat Party official. We can play this clip as B-roll. I didn't pull it in. I'm sure we can find it. Mark Holodnack, a local realtor and the legislative District 12 Democratic Party treasurer. He's this creepy looking middle-aged man lurking around and screaming at teenage girls. Calling them the C word as he chases them because they took a picture with ICE. And I wish this was sort of a rare thing with the Democrats. And I know they always are just projecting things on us. I mean, look at this dude. It's just weird that, like, Democrats are so often the caricatures that they portray of Republicans. Where, like, if you asked for the least generous depiction of a Republican, it would be this guy, right? It'd be some old white guy just running around screaming at little girls, calling them the C word because he disagrees with their political takes. Like, it's just them. This is just who they are. And they're all like this. And we've covered this over and over and over again because they're all like this. Same thing with the, like, kind of in an inverted way, but they're just like shallow, delusional people that, again, are believe that they live in a world that doesn't exist, but then they act on that. And part of it is just pure projection, pure lies, and they know they're lying. Part of it they do believe. Part of it they really, like, right now there's a big push to get rid of body cams. Because believe it or not, they really did think that body cams would have helped their side. They really thought, like, we have to demand body cams because there are racist cops out there abusing black people. They get the body cams, and the body cam footage is just a relentless stream of black people trying to stab cops and cops defending themselves. And so now they're arguing against body cams. Now, if they knew that the world that they were pretending existed, if they knew that it was delusional, then they would have never asked for the body cams. But they must have believed to some degree that the body cams really would expose racist activity, white supremacy, abuse of cops, but it didn't. But they really believed it did, otherwise they wouldn't have advocated for it. So part of them does believe what they say, but then the other very much larger part is just pure projection. They are hateful, cynical, vile people, and they do not understand that we are not. They do not comprehend that we are honest and forthright and genuinely loving to everybody. They think this must be a disguise, and in fact, the more good we are, the more consistent and legitimately, like, humanitarian we are, the more evil we seem, because it just seems like it's that much more of a deception. You understand? They're all completely insane. And so it's like the image of the nurse that was killed, Preddy. Every media outlet, I think CNN got caught doing this, pretty sure New York Post published it, got caught publishing a photo that had been AI manipulated to make him more handsome, to make him look better. They face-tuned his photo. Again, it's something that they, like, claim right-wingers do, that they have this idea that right-wingers are just dazzled by spectacle, and it's just like, Trump's handsome, how could he be wrong? But, like, we don't, like, pictures of Trump where he looks goofy or stupid, like, we love that. We don't care about that stuff. But Republicans, Democrats, like, they really are driven by, like, appearances, and, like, they really don't care about the guy on the left. The guy on the right is handsome. They care about him. They empathize with him. It's kind of like how Luigi Mangione has a ton of fangirls. You know who doesn't? Tyler Robinson. Even though Tyler Robinson killed the guy that they all hate, he's not handsome, so they don't care, because they're shallow people. You understand? We'll be back with guests.
I'm here to announce a new, extremely exciting product at thealexshowstore.com, and that's Mind Fuel. Brought to you by the same folks that developed Optimal Human. This is an Optimal Human product. We set out with our sponsor, Bigley, to come out with a clean, nootropic energy shot that doesn't have any letdown, but gives you clean energy. This stuff is so strong, though, I take half a shot in the morning. It's a big shot. And another half in the afternoon if I need to work late. But again, you can still sleep on it because it's not a traditional stimulant. So if you loved Optimal Human, the strongest, best, super nutrient-packed green drink out there, available right now at thealexshowstore.com, you are going to love Mind Fuel. And when I go to these ingredients, go research these for yourself, and then know, when you find out how great they are, that we have the very best and the very strongest in this product, Mind Fuel, available right now at thealexshowstore.com. Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant-heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, benefit, no crash, No blood sugar spike. Advantage can be used daily without guilt, and it's good for your whole body, not just your brain. Caffeine-free formula. Smooth, clean energy. Advantage, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. Nootropic Alpha GPC, Citricoline, DMAE, GABA. Benefit supports mental clarity and focus. Advantage competes with premium brain formulas in a convenient shot. And the best part is, it's an adaptogenic and herbal proprietary blend. Balanced, grounded energy. Advantage appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers. And then it's got high-quality electrolytes and a spectrum of high-quality B. If you love our other products, theolishowstore.com, you are going to love Mind Fuel. And if you haven't tried our Ultra Methylene Blue or our Shilajit or Irish Sea Moss or our Bovine Colostrum, you're crazy. These are all incredible products. Get your Mind Fuel now at theolishowstore.com and help keep us on the air while empowering your life.
Hour of the American Journal is on, and I'm very happy to welcome my guest right off the bat, Carlin Borischenko. Can be found at decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. That's carlyn.substack.com. She tracks and spies on the left and actually delivers what they're thinking, what they're planning, what they're saying in their private chats. It's really important and powerful work. Carlin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Harrison.
My pleasure. I've been meaning to get you on. I mean, this is your time to shine. What can you tell us about what's going on in Minneapolis and Minnesota at large?
The situation is really bad. And I got to be honest, I kind of thought the winter weather would deter them at the beginning. But now what I'm beginning to understand is like the left is building so much momentum behind the anti-ICE activism that I just don't know what can stop them. And one of the interesting things, Harrison, and I've been listening in to anti-ICE organizing calls across a lot of different groups on the far left almost every single day for weeks. The left is happy and they think they're winning, and they are more excited than ever. And you have to understand, I've been following the far left for about 5 years now. I have never heard them this happy and this excited and this motivated, and they really think they have all the momentum on their side. And I got to tell you, with the way the Trump administration is responding to them, it kind of seems like Trump is very weak in this situation. He doesn't really have a grasp on what is going to be required to stop the problem. We are only going to see more protesting, more noise demonstrations outside of these hotels that we've been seeing. And the really scary part is this. This is not just in Minnesota. The far left right now is trying to work to export all of the different strategies that they're using in Minnesota nationwide. So we already saw hotel protests show up last night in New York. We're starting to see it show up in California. I know it's showing up in Ohio, Missouri, South Carolina. I've even seen ads for Florida, Texas, and even Montana. And so what the far left doing is being phenomenally successful in Minnesota. And it's going to be very dangerous if the Trump administration doesn't get a handle on this to stop it.
How do you think they should get a handle? I mean, because I'm not surprised by that. If I was on the left, I would also be feeling ebullient right now. Like, I'd be feeling like we were winning, because obviously they are. I mean, I don't think there's any debate on that. What would you do? Let's start with the solutions. How would you approach this from if you were Trump?
They need to go in with overwhelming force. That's the only way I can think to describe this. That is what the left understands, is overwhelming force. So, for example, I've been watching these hotel protests that where they're going and they're finding the hotels that ICE officials are staying in, and they're going and banging pans and making all sorts of noise outside these hotels. Here's what happens, Harrison. The left goes and makes a ton of noise for hours. They break things. They destroy property. And then the police show up and they make an announcement saying, hey, you kids better cut it out and go home. And they don't cut it out and they keep going. And then the police say, hey, you guys, we're going to arrest you if you don't cut it out. And then, you know, there's some tear gas fired, and maybe the police even catch a few people and put them in handcuffs. But then what happens immediately after that is the police let them go. They literally let them go. They're not really arresting anyone. They let them go, and then the entire group reconvenes and starts making noise again until the police show up again. And it's like, until these people are put in jail and kept off the streets and prevented from doing activism, we are only going to see this continue to expand and grow and get much worse than it already is.
Again, it seems like an inescapable conclusion from the trajectory that things are going now. And of course, it just, when you really think about it, it becomes like overwhelming when you realize, like, even if you arrest them, the judges are probably going to let them out. The prosecutors are probably on their side. I mean, what do you do when the entire local government
seems to be hijacked by these radical groups. I mean, the signal chat is revealed. A lot of people very close to not just the local city government, but the state government are actively involved, actively communicating with the rioters and, of course, helping them out however they can. So, I mean, really, this is a very, very difficult situation to deal with if you're trying to deal with it through the proper channels of the local government. They're not going to capitulate. I mean, they're not going to help, right?
No, they're absolutely not going to help. And that's why I say Trump needs to go in with overwhelming force. And it gets even scarier than that, because a lot of these groups, I mean, this organizing has been going on for over a year. And so we're only going to see it get worse.
More on the other side. Quick commercial break. We'll be back in 90 seconds. More with Carlin Borischenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. You got to listen to these people. They're telling you the truth when they say they're trying to overthrow the country and want to kill you. They're not lying. They lie about everything else.
Energy shots have been all the rage for decades because they really work. But most of them are full of dyes and toxic stimulants and have huge crashes. We set out to develop a product at thealexshowstore.com that has all the very best adaptogens, nootropics to biohack your body and not just help your brain, but every cell in your entire body. We've done it, ladies and gentlemen. Mind Fuel is next level with no letdown, no crash. It is very strong. So I take half a shot in the morning, half in the afternoon, and it's just amazing. And again, the effects go on for days and days and days because these are super nutrients that are in Mind Fuel. For the time I have here, I can't tell you all the incredible ingredients. So go to thealexshowstore.com and look at what is in it. And of course, proprietary herbal ingredients as well. Go now to thealexjonesstore.com and secure your Mind Fuel and be the reason we'll always be on the air. Thank you so much for your support. If you love our other products, you're going to love Mind Fuel.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest is Carlin Borischenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. Again, Carlin, I can't encourage people enough to go follow you on X, go to decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. You do such important work identifying what's happening in the leftist chats, what they're actually saying to each other. And again, I feel, I was saying before you came on, when it comes to May Day, things like that, I feel like you and I are sitting alone up on a ridge watching a train barrel towards a crash. And we're 2 years away and we're going to sit here for 2 years going, slow the train down. You've got to stop it. Why does nobody care about this? Why are the Republicans so incapable of grasping what the left is doing and why they're doing it and how they're doing it? It's like we are constantly surprised with the most obvious stuff. How do we get through to people, Carlin?
I don't know, Harrison, but what I will say, you know, I mean, the good news is that there are more people paying attention than ever. And I do think that people are starting to wake up to the fact that this is a problem. Perhaps they're waking up a bit too late, and I wish they would have woken up years ago, but it is what it is. But on that May Day point, I want to tell you this. So because the left is so motivated and so energized, I think they might be actually trying to move up that schedule for May Day. So, of course, we saw the first mass general strike that the left tried to do in Minneapolis last week on Friday. They did try to export that nationwide with a certain amount of success. They're going to be doing another general strike this Friday coming up, but the far left is already planning for May Day 2026, which is on May 1st. It is a Friday, of course, and they are already planning to do a big nationwide, hopefully for them, prolonged mass strike where they are literally trying to shut down the economy across all sectors. And by all sectors, I mean the teachers' unions are directly involved in this. They want to shut down the schools, not only by doing student walkouts, but by organizing with the teachers unions. The grocers association and unions are involved in this. The auto workers are involved. The airline unions are involved. The AFL-CIO, the SEIU, the Teamsters are involved. Like pretty much every major union is going to be involved in these mass protests. And that's honestly, you know, if Republicans want something they can do, what really needs to happen is there need to be congressional hearings into the political organizing activities of the labor unions, because the labor unions are not not about helping employees. They are about far left organizing. And the proof of this is just look at any major leftist protest. The main organizers in all of them are the labor unions. And so I think we are in for a heck of a May Day 2026. I've been on multiple organizing calls where they're already starting to plan for May Day 2026. I was just on one last night with the Sunrise Movement where they literally have an entire manual that I will be releasing on my Substack today about their organizing plans. The Sunrise Movement is the same organization doing the noise protests outside the hotels in Minneapolis. So it's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. Again, it's just so frustrating that it would be so easy to do something or anything about this, and we just can't get anything done. But, man, it must be nice to be a leftist. I mean, it's a win-win for them, right? They get to sort of move their schedule up. They'll try this on May 1st, 2026, and, hey, maybe it snowballs. Maybe it becomes something really big, and it becomes successful, and they take down the government. Or it's just a practice run, and they get to sort of train their networks and figure out, you know, pros and cons, because obviously nothing's going to happen to them. This is just a training run. It either succeeds, wonderful, and if it doesn't, they get to try again next year. Again, what do we have to do to get people to understand, and tell me if you disagree, we have to intervene. There's no convincing these people to stop. There's no meeting some of these people's demands, and they'll be satisfied. We have to physically intervene, stop these people, break up their networks. That's the only option as far as I see it. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. They are not going to stop. They are not going to be deprogrammed. There's no reasoning with these people. And I think the very first step, honestly, is that people have got to start taking the far left a lot more seriously than they've been taking them over the past several years. And this is my constant consternation. I know it's yours too, is that people on the right look at the left and they think they're stupid. They're mentally ill. They don't have jobs. Well, I'm sorry. They do have jobs. They control the labor unions. How do they control the labor unions if they don't have jobs, you idiots? And it's like every time people say stuff like this, they are perpetuating these falsehoods that make it very easy to dismiss the left. This is not a bunch of angry college students that are going to grow out of it. These are people who have been indoctrinated into this ideology since they were 5 years old. They are not growing out of it this time. And by the way, we have an entire teaching pool and two major teachers unions that are also indoctrinated into this ideology and are constantly perpetuating it in the public schools and are facilitating all of this. Even the University of Minnesota last week, I would love to see Trump defund the University of Minnesota, because quite frankly, the University of Minnesota is responsible for a lot of these students that are outside doing this. And guess what? Last Friday for the general strike, over 200 professors at the University of Minnesota canceled classes, held anti-ICE organizing training, and did proactive activism to book out hotel rooms at Hilton hotels so that ICE officers couldn't book them instead. So the colleges and universities are complicit, and Trump would be well advised to pull all federal funding from the University of Minnesota if he wants to shut it down.
Well, there you add it to the list of things that he could do with a stroke of a pen that he's not doing for some inexplicable reason. And you're right. People don't take the left seriously. Like when the Signal chat came out, I mean, it's shocking what's in there. It's crazy that the people, you know, the former campaign manager for Tim Walz is one of the organizers. Like what was exposed, I'm not under, you know, downplaying, but not exactly a surprise for people like you and I. Like, of course these Signal chats exist. Of course this is the level of organization that they have. Of course they're sending manuals out showing how to intervene with ICE. This should not be a surprise, and it should not be independent reporters that are having to discover this stuff and put the FBI's feet to the fire. They're not doing the research. What is your take on the Signal chat? Was this a singular big thing, or is this just one of many chats that you think we need to be concerned about?
Oh, Harrison, I've been reporting on the Signal chats for almost a year. The Signal chats were not a surprise at all. And just because it was a surprise to mass conservatives, you know, it doesn't mean that it hasn't been going on. This organizing has been going on for over a year now, ever since Trump took office. And I'll give you one better. And this is on my Substack right now. I just posted it this morning. Months ago, I actually found an archive of far left propaganda in the form of zines that are being used to facilitate ICE reporting and these Signal groups all over the country. An interesting thing about these zines is they all listed local hotlines that people could actually call to report ICE sightings in their neighborhoods. What happens when you call to report to a hotline is that the report gets facilitated out to the Signal group. So it's not just Minnesota. It's like there is a nationwide network of hotlines and organizations that are sponsoring these hotlines that people can actually go to look to where they are the ones facilitating all of this anti-ICE organizing and the reporting into the Signal groups in the first place. Just this morning on my Substack, which is Karlyn, karlyn.substack.com. I posted an entire database of the propaganda that's being distributed in the real world all over the country, a list of all the hotlines, and a list of all of the organizations that are sponsoring those hotlines. And I'm calling for the public's help here. I need help in going through all this stuff because I have been trying to get this information into the hands of journalists for months. I personally don't have time to track all this stuff down, but I promise you, if people go to my Substack and they find that list of organizations that is linked in that article, they will be able to track down who is funding these signal groups, who's coordinating these signal groups, and how nationwide across all major cities, these people are working together to impede the operations of ICE. And that image right there is a picture. That is actually me finding one of these zines in the real world. I found that when I was undercover the last time in San Francisco. And so I know this information is being used in the real world. I know these hotlines are coordinated, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of them are being funded by local and state government.
Of course they are. I mean, when we know that they're involved, I just retweeted one of the videos that you did saying, I know how all the anti-ICE signal groups are connected nationwide and how to find their funding sources. Again, we obviously can't rely on the Republicans to do anything about this. I mean, it sucks because they could so easily, and that is the obvious solution. Short of that, what can people do? Like, because I've been encouraging people to go do what Cam Higby did, what you do, go find these signal chats, publish them. It's like, why not? What is there to lose? But I also, I don't want to be encouraging people to do something if, it's going to get them doxxed or whatever. So how do you do this safely? How do you, find your way into these groups? Because I think this is something everybody listening to us could be doing. I mean, just do it on your lunch break, find these signal chats or find these social media groups and make an account and join them and just see what they're up to. Like, it's so easy. I don't think there's any risk. Is there a risk in this? What do people need to know? And how do people do their own research? Because we cannot rely on mainstream media. We cannot rely on the Republicans. It's up to us, folks. We got to get involved. How do people do that?
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Harrison. I think everyone can do this research. And in fact, in my community, through my YouTube channel and my Substack, we are actually coordinating with many people in my community who do go undercover to gather this information. They go into the signal groups. Some of them sign up for far left groups in their neighborhood. They go to their meetings. They track everything they're doing. They make it available to the public so that we can all see. Anyone can learn how to do this. But the thing of it is the first thing people need to do is learn how to speak the language of the left. You have to learn what their language actually means, because they do speak in a completely different language. That's what I teach on my YouTube channel every single day. I have free resources on my Substack to be able to help people out to learn the language, because if you don't understand what they're saying, you're not going to be able to articulate the correct information. I do want to warn people, though, there are different spectrums of the left where some groups are not dangerous at all, and it's not going to put you in any harm to try to infiltrate them. But when we're talking about the far left, and the far left are the ones doing the majority of this anti-ICE organizing, it can be very dangerous to go to these groups in person, especially if you don't know how to speak their language, because they're going to be able to figure out who you are very quickly. And so I would really caution people to be very careful. I've heard from multiple conservatives that want to go to these anti-ICE protests and they want to disrupt them or do pro-ICE protesting. And while I understand the inclination, people also have to understand that they will physically assault you. They are very hyped up. We've seen them physically assault multiple people. We've seen them go after Cam Higby and Nick Sorter. They pretend to jump on cars to try to pretend that they got hit by cars and stuff like that to get them in trouble. They physically throw things at them like water bottles that are frozen. You have to be very aware of what you're getting into if you go to these things in person. And so I would highly recommend that, like, everyone sign up to go to their organizing calls, listen into them online, create secret identities. I have like 15 secret identities that I use to go into these meetings all the time. And so anyone can do this, but you also have to know what you're dealing with when it comes to dealing with the left.
And it seems like the younger the groups are, the more extreme they are. At least that's what I've gotten. That's a sense I've gotten from your videos in particular. It's like you had a video recently of college students, and that was radical. And then there's high school students inside that. And of course, we've noticed this with the Tesla protests and everything else. I know we talked about this last time you were on, that the older people are the ones out there still waving signs and protesting, and the younger people aren't doing that, not because they don't believe or don't, oppose the government, but because they've given up on protesting. Is that true? And what sort of trends do you see demographically in terms of younger people being more radical or older people being disconnected with the reality of what they're involved in? How do you see the demographics of the left right now?
Yeah, so certainly on the left, there are multiple different types of people. You've got like your old hippie communists that have always been communists, but they're not really dangerous. They're kind of like harmless. They go out and they hold their signs and they chant their chants and whatever. But the younger generation, and I'm really talking about maybe like 30s and under here, they have grown up in an extreme far left environment that's been heavily influenced by the post 9/11 era, by Occupy Wall Street, and by leftist propaganda that is circulating in these far left ecosystems and communities that is much more extreme than anything the old hippie communists ever read during that kind of their tenure. And so I would say you're absolutely correct that younger people are more extreme in their thinking. And what I will also tell you is a very important trend that I've seen over the last year is an explicit rejection of nonviolent protests. So
right.
I've seen now over multiple leftist groups, they're saying the No Kings protests are great for a day, but they don't really accomplish anything because they're nonviolent. We need to get more violent. We need to get more aggressive. This is what they're writing in their manifestos. And the Trump administration has only emboldened them in this aspect as well, because after Trump issued the executive order declaring them domestic terrorists, Antifa basically came out and started publishing and they called Trump's bluff. They said, oh yeah, Trump, you want to declare us domestic terrorists? Well, we're going to come at you more aggressively. We're going to do more activism. So Antifa doubled down and Trump never followed through on the executive order to declare them domestic terrorists. Like almost no one in Antifa has actually been arrested, even though we know exactly who they are. They're the people protesting outside the hotels. They're the people destroying things. Like, it's very, very clear based on their operational tactics who these people are, but they're not being arrested. And so every day that Trump allows this to go on, the far left is getting more emboldened to engage in destructive behavior, vandalism, violence, and they are now viewing it as part of their standard operating procedure.
Yeah, and of course that's going to happen. I mean, Trump is responding in the worst way possible. If you just don't do anything, that's one thing. But if you act tough and then don't follow through, of course you're going to embolden the people that you're, you know, trying to fight against. And I wonder, just like, are all of these things performative from the Trump administration? Because he has this big press conference where he declares them domestic terrorists. Nothing changes. Nothing happens. Their funding isn't rounded up. The networks aren't. I mean, just nothing has happened. I think the same thing with the ADL, and Kash Patel makes this big thing saying, we are no longer working with the ADL. According to the ADL, they're still working hand in glove. So it's just like, they just make these announcements. Are they just blatantly lying, or are they actually doing anything? Have you heard anything that's been done against Antifa since they were declared domestic terrorists at all?
No, not a single thing. And to be honest with you, the Trump administration is lying. They're saying they're funded by these big funding sources. I'm sorry, but that's just not true. Antifa's funded by mutual aid. They fund themselves through small cash donations. And it's actually funny because when Trump made this big deal about them printing these beautiful signs, Antifa actually responded with videos showing how they print the signs on their home printers at home. Like, wow. These are not big funded organizations. And so it's like the Trump administration, I think, is completely unhinged from reality in terms of how the left is operating, how they're organizing. They are advancing a narrative that does not actually mirror what is going on. And so the Trump administration needs to start looking at what the far left is actually doing, because the spreading of the propaganda, the left literally makes fun of the right all the time. We're starting to see this with the left is coming out and saying, you idiots, we're not paid protesters. We do all this for free, yeah. Which is actually the truth. And until people start to accept that, then I don't know what else can be done in this situation.
Well, I would think something would be a good move. I mean, anything perhaps would be a beneficial move, because right now, I mean, Trump talks tough. I went off for a while today about the latest post where he says, surprisingly, Jacob Frey is not going to work with ICE, even though we had a lovely conversation about it. And it's like, does he not realize the left just lies to his face and he buys it and it makes him look like an idiot? And then you've got this. Tim Walz finishes meeting with Tom Homan, demanding swift, significant reduction in immigration agents. So they're not being cowed. They're not, you know, backing down from their demands. They're upping their demands. They're becoming more aggressive. Is there any risk, Carlin, that an aggressive push from Trump, he declares the Insurrection Act, he sends in troops, would that not just stoke the fire? Is the left, do they want that, or are they scared of that? I can't really figure it out. What do you think, just from your taking of the temperature? Let's say Trump today goes, you know what, I've had enough, I'm sending troops in. Would that crush the protest, or would that make it spiral out of control?
I truly don't know, Harrison. And the thing of it is, I think if Trump had declared the Insurrection Act maybe a week or two ago, we would be in a much different situation than we're in now. I think potentially it could, like force it to spiral out of control and just get much bigger. But I also think that the only way to actually stop this is the use of overwhelming force to quell the organizing that's going on and to stop their momentum dead in the tracks. And so it's like the Trump administration, because they have ignored this problem for so long and they put it off for so long, they are now in a really difficult, almost lose-lose situation where I truly do not know how they can even get their hands around this. And this is the problem with lying to yourself about what is going on the far left, ignoring the problem, ignoring how serious it is, making fun of them, just owning the libs on Twitter. That doesn't solve actual problems. And all the time that conservatives spend doing this stuff where they're just making fun of the libs or whatever, they are wasting time and energy that they could have used to solve the problem. Again, I cannot emphasize this enough. This is not a problem that jumped up overnight. They have been doing this organizing for over a year. It started very, very small and then just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was ignored for the entire past year by the Trump administration, by conservative media, by most independent journalists. I was one of the only people covering it for months leading up to the June protests in Los Angeles. And this is what happens, folks. This is what happens when you ignore problems and you expect them to go away because you think the left is just a bunch of silly college kids that are going to grow up and get a job someday. No, they're not. They're ideologues. This is their identity. This is what they believe. And they are deeply committed to overthrowing what they believe is the capitalist United States government and abolishing the Constitution. So can we all please get our heads in the game? Because things are about to get very bad if we don't.
Very powerful stuff. I absolutely agree. There's a story on InfoWars, quote, "It's insurgency." Former Spec Ops soldier exposes Minneapolis, quote unquote, protest, saying what's unfolding in Minneapolis right now is not a protest. It's low level insurgency infrastructure built by people who've clearly studied the playbook. That's the opinion of Eric Schwalm, a former Green Beret with experience in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, whether you want to call it a color revolution, an insurgency of some sort, clearly the goal, the ultimate goal, is the overthrow of the United States. And the longer it goes on, the harder it gets to solve. I wanted to ask you about this. It was actually posted by Data Republican, but it's a post from SignalGate admin Moss, also known as Fugu, basically saying communists have a critical weakness in all of their solidarity rhetoric. Their psychology cannot handle the existence of opposing opinions, let alone spies. Just one person infiltrating breaks down all their trust in operations. If that doesn't restore agency and motivate you, I don't know what will. What's your take on that opinion, that these communist groups are vulnerable to infiltration and disruption if you can sort of start arguments inside?
Yeah, well, generally speaking, I don't trust anything Data Republican says. I found them spreading misinformation on multiple circumstances, so I think they're a terrible source of information personally. I don't actually think that's an accurate view of how the left operates either. Listen, a lot of these leftist activists, they know each other in person. And so while it is true that sometimes you can create a little bit of infighting, it's not going to be significant enough to actually break down the whole group because this is a fun fact for people. The left actually has an entire manual about how they deal with conflict. I've seen it. It's about this thick. So they actually have ways that they deal with conflict within the group. They deal with disagreements in the group that if they do have a little bit of infighting, they tend to get over it very quickly. So I think that you can create different infighting between different leftist groups. For example, Antifa does not like the Party for Socialism and Liberation. Revolutionary Socialists do not like the Democratic Socialists of America. They consider them to be kind of their biggest enemies because some are revolutionaries, some are reformers. It's a whole big thing I can spend hours talking about. So you can create dissension between the groups, but creating dissension in the groups oftentimes doesn't happen because these groups are they're collectivists. This is a collectivist mindset. And so they know each other in person. They just go talk to each other in person.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's very good to know. Still worth a shot. I still think it's worth a shot. I think if you want to go in and, follow the CIA's manual for simple sabotage and, I think it's, why not? Again, my guest is Carlin Boroshenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. That's KARLYN.substack.com. And of course, follow her on X. Last minute, I wish we had more time. We're going to have to get you on again, especially if these operations continue to grow. Last minute, floor is yours. What do you want people to know about what's happening in Minnesota, Minneapolis, and where it goes from here?
Yeah, I really want people to understand that we are about to see this exported nationwide. J.D. Vance was absolutely incorrect in his speech the other day when he said this is a problem that's unique to Minnesota. It's in Minnesota because Minnesota is actually where modern day Antifa in the United States began back in 1986 in the Sharp movement, which was the skinheads for against racial prejudice. That became the Anti-Racist Action Network, which was a nationwide network of decentralized non-hierarchical cells that evolved into what is modern day Antifa. It started in Minnesota. That's why it's starting there, and we see so much leftist stuff there. But Antifa is currently working on exporting this all over the country, and yes, it is in red states too. This is not just a Democrat problem. This is a Republican problem as well. And until people start taking this seriously and really honing in on how the left is organizing and what they're doing, then we are totally lost.
Absolutely incredible stuff. Carlin Borchenko, decodetheleft.com, carlin.substack.com. The fire is rising. The longer we wait to fight it, the harder it's going to be to put out, folks. Follow her on X at Dr. Carlin B, Dr. Carlin B on X. Thank you, Carlin. Amazing stuff.
Now, this new product is incredible. It's from our sponsor, Bigly, at thealexjonesstore.com. Optimal Human, you love the green powder. Super nutrient, the very best out there. Well, this is Optimal Human Nootropic called Mind Fuel. Introducing Mind Fuel, a super healthy, super strong energy nootropic adaptogen, which doesn't make you sick, doesn't have a letdown. It is incredible. Not just a few of the bottles. Look how many bottles are in there. And I only drink about half a bottle a day. It's so strong. Look at that right there, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what comes in each box of this. And it is simply amazing. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel is here. This clean, caffeine-free energy shot is designed for clear thinking, steady focus, and zero compromise. It's time to abandon sugary energy drinks and stimulant-heavy formulas in favor of clean, functional, nootropic-based energy. Zero calories, sugar-free, no crash, no blood sugar spike, can be used daily without any guilt. Caffeine-free formula, smooth, clean energy, ideal for caffeine-sensitive users and late-day use. It's also got all these other incredible compounds like citicoline, alpha GPC, GABA, supports mental clarity and focus. It appeals to both biohackers and holistic consumers, high quality electrolytes and B vitamins. More than a brain shot, true functional fuel. Optimal Human Nootropic Mind Fuel, that's the name of the product, isn't just another energy product. It's a smarter alternative for consumers who demand clarity, control, and clean performance without compromise. Get 25% off for life when you become a subscriber, canceling time for free. Get Mind Fuel down at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you've never tried the original superfood greens, Optimal Human, you really want to get this as well. It's the best green food I've ever had at thealexjonesstore.com. The widest selection of Patriot apparel, all sorts of cool collectible knives and more. And that's what funds us, and that's what does this. And I really appreciate your support because I can't do it without you. So I want to commend and thank the listeners. But just like I steered you right on gold and silver 2.5 years ago, I got out of the market before that. I said, now's the time. I was totally right. It's like I steer you right on politics. These products are incredible. Get our ultramethylene blue. It is the best in the market. Our Shilajit is the best. Our Irish Sea Moss is the best. Our turmeric is the strongest. Ultimate turmeric. TheAlexJonesStore.com. You are missing out. You don't get it. I want to thank those that have supported. I want to challenge those that haven't. What are you waiting for?
Just what I needed for my morning jog.
Working 12 to 13 hours a day, Mind Fuel keeps me on my toes and in the action.
Try this energy shot for a boost like no other. Power your mind and body today.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Sea Moss. Was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Mm. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. It's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I loved his supplement formulas. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together.
and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good.
You can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
The health of American children is in crisis.
When we're talking about an autoimmune disease crisis, shouldn't we look closest at the one product designed to alter our immune system for life? There'd be one easy study to rule it out. Compare vaccinated children to unvaccinated children.
As fate would have it, Dell met Marcus Servos.
He agreed to do the study.
This could be one of the most valuable studies in the field.
4.47 times the amount of speech disorders.
Learning issues, developmental delays.
Over four times more likely to have an asthma diagnosis.
5.5 times risk. Amongst the unvaccinated group, there were zero.
If this is true, we are systematically making kids sick, very sick.
Only one problem. They're not going to publish it.
They left us with no choice.
I'm going to bring hidden cameras so that no matter what happens at this dinner, I can prove it happened.
What do you think about the study you guys have done?
Well, I think it's a good study.
The way they could do the study better?
Not that I put it out just how it is.
It's the right thing to do, but I just don't want to.
Somebody's going to come back and they're going to say the study is flawed.
The unpublished Henry Ford analysis is fundamentally flawed.
Because there's a political agenda to it.
I'm not going to do it. Publishing something like that, might as well retire. I'd be finished.
Sick. It's really sick.
I mean, I'm obviously, like, really emotional.
This is an inconvenient study for the entire vaccine agenda.
An inconvenientstudy.com is where you can find and watch that documentary for absolutely free. It is the latest from Dell Bigtree, who joins me in studio. Now you can follow Dell on X at Dell Bigtree, thehighwire.com, and icandecide.org. Dell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Harrison, thanks for having me. It's great being here.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you here, and there's been a lot of developments in your realm of vaccines and MAHA, and as much as I feel like I say this every time we talk about MAHA, they're having success. As frustrated as I've been about a lot of stuff with the Trump administration, I cannot fault MAHA for just nose to the grindstone, hitting the ground running, and really achieving some great things.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the most effective part of the Trump administration right now is Robert Kennedy Jr., MAHA, an amazing team around him in Jay Bhattacharya at NIH, which is just poetic justice, given that we'll be talking today about some of the FOIA requests that have come in. But originally, when you had the Great Barrington Declaration come out and tens of thousands of doctors around the world saying we should not be locking down, this is not the way to handle this, you had this email between Francis Collins, heads of NIH, and Tony Fauci saying this must be stopped, this must be destroyed. So there's real poetic justice, because Jay Bhattacharya, obviously one of the signature authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, now he's got Francis Collins' job. He's running NIH. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. I mean, it's something you see in movies. You never really see it happen in politics, yet it is happening. Of course, I love what Dr. Marty McCarry is doing at FDA. You've got Mehmet Oz making, you know, amazing changes to the Medicaid, Medicare program. Of course, at the top of that is Robert Kennedy Jr., who I was director of communications for when he ran for president. So I'm really proud of him and the work that he's doing over there.
It's absolutely amazing. And that's not to say he's getting everything he wants. Obviously, there are massive headwinds or, you know, forces pushing back against him in very big ways. But he's having success. And again, it's just the one thing where it's like every week or so we get a little boost of dopamine when they release a statement about vaccines or admit something that we've been saying forever and that they've always denied. And there's been a couple, you know, stories like that of admitting that 10 kids died from the FDA admitted from the COVID vaccine, or that the COVID vaccine causes myocarditis, and every kid who had myocarditis had gotten the vaccine. No kids who were unvaccinated.
Yeah, huge study out of Spain showed that millions of kids they looked at and said not a single child got myocarditis or pericarditis from the illness, because that's what we were being told,
right?
We've been told by the former HHS secretaries and our former government that, you know, the vaccine is safer, that it doesn't cause as much myocarditis or pericarditis as the disease itself. Can we just take a moment to just break down how completely unscientific that is? Because I've argued this with, you know, reporters at New York Times, Washington Post that would make that statement to me. I was like, okay, let's be reasonable, because I'm a journalist. I'm not a doctor, but let me just take that at face value. First of all, the vaccine is turning your body into the spike protein manufacturing plant, correct? And I would say this to a reporter. It doesn't give you the full virus. It's not the entire COVID virus. It's just the spike protein, which we know is the most deadly, dangerous part of the COVID virus. It's not the weakest part, which is where we usually make a vaccine. Usually we inject, I always say, if you think of a virus like a tank and there's the howitzer, you don't put the howitzer inside of you. You just make the wheels of the tank, right?
Right.
So that if, you know, when the body attacks, you know, it'll just take out the wheels so the virus is destroyed. You don't put the most dangerous part and make your body start reproducing the most dangerous, the literally the bioweapon of this virus. You don't make that what your body's producing, but that's what they did. But I would say to a journalist, all things being equal, let's say it's the same spike protein that's in the virus that is in the vaccine. Okay? That would be like, yes, okay. Now, in one situation, I might randomly catch this virus and breathe it in. In the other, I'm going to inject every single person on the planet and mandate that they take it. What are the odds, or what is the increased odds that you're going to have spike protein in your body? Is it more if you're vaccinating everybody and guaranteeing they get it, or it's randomly selected? And they go, oh my God, I never thought of that. Now, let's go to the fact that they brag that there's more antigen response, that there's a higher load when you're vaccinated versus breathing it in. So now you get even more. The bragging, you're getting more spike protein. Now let's talk about the fact that the vaccine doesn't work very well. In fact, after 15 weeks, it is negative efficacy, meaning you're more likely to catch the virus because it's primed your body wrong. So now you were not just guaranteed to have spike protein in your body once. You're on 10 freaking boosters, which is way more than you'd ever get in nature. So all things being equal, it's the same spike protein, which is what they promised it was. You're getting more contact. You're in more danger. And if that is what, and I would say to every reporter, are we agreed that the spike protein is what causes myocarditis and pericarditis? Right. Yes. Then how in God's name is it possible that a natural infection is causing more cases when the only thing we're doing is mandating this injection and forcing it onto people? Lastly, as you've reported, we all have, and Dr. Robert Malone, inventor of the technology, has said, we created a mutant version of the spike protein using pseudouridine, inserting it so that it can't die.
Right.
So unlike the very weak spike protein that our body attacks and kills it immediately, this persists. It stays alive. In fact, they've studied people up to 750 days, I think is the last study.
Right.
In fact, it just depends on how long ago you got it and how long the study is. They're still finding people whose bodies are creating spike protein now 2-3 years after being injected, something that never happens in the natural world. Your body would have beat it. So all of that being said, that is the explanation for why when Spain does a study, we find out more children are dying from myocarditis and pericarditis. In fact, the only ones are getting it from the vaccine. And you're right. The FDA finally looks at the VAERS system. And this is what people are like, oh my God, Robert Kennedy Jr., what are you talking about? The VAERS system is the only CAPTCHA system, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. This is the system that doctors, if you suddenly die 4 days after a vaccine, you're supposed to report it. Not sure if it was the vaccine, but sure was in close proximity to the moment I just gave them this vaccine, or they have a seizure, or all of those things. That's what VAERS is there for. Well, what we just found out is finally, with Robert Kennedy Jr. as the head of HHS, he has, you know, his scientists go and start calling everybody that reported dying, that their child died after the vaccination. Call them. Let's get a full report. Explain to us. We're going to look at your case. And there was, you know, I think hundreds of cases in there, but in the end, they whittled it down and said, for sure, for absolute positive. Sure, we have cross, you know, sectioned this. We've had people from all sides of the investigation look at it. 10 of these kids definitely died from the vaccine. And so we are way beyond this didn't affect anybody. And, you know, what I think is mind blowing is you imagine, didn't the Biden administration do that? Didn't our health, isn't the entire point of VAERS is that when you're seeing deaths in a totally experimental product, you admitted this was an experimental product, you took it out of its safety trials early under emergency use authorization, which means you were turning our entire nation into a test group. We are not using a product that has been proven to be safe. So now we should be monitoring more thoroughly than we ever have in the history of mankind. This captures systems, the VAERS system. So if we see deaths being reported of our children, you would expect FDA is calling those parents immediately, reaching out immediately. Instead, when we interview people like Maddie DeGarry, paralyzed after the vaccine, you know, you look at all the great work that React 19, I think you've had some of them on, a great nonprofit, for all the people injured by this vaccine. When some of them were in the trials, Maddie DeGarry was in the trials for Pfizer, and no one called her. She reported it to Pfizer. She reported the FDA, said, I am paralyzed after this vaccine. Mm-hmm. From the trials, no one ever called her, didn't care, didn't matter. So now you finally have an administration doing what we believe should have been happening and was happening, we thought was happening the whole time. Call the people that are being injured. Call the ones, isn't this what we're paying for? Aren't we supposed to be making sure this product is safe for everyone to take? Nobody cared. No one in the government prior to this administration ever cared how many people's lives were destroyed by this experimental product. So yeah, huge changes. Maybe not like, you know, I think there's people that wanted to see Robert Kennedy Jr. erase the vaccine program upon arrival.
Although he's you know. I mean, what he's doing is not far from that. I mean, the way that he's destroyed the childhood vaccine schedule, absolutely massive. Obviously, you know, all of these studies coming out about the COVID vaccine. I mean, it really, like, hearing you just lay it out like that, it was such a crime that was committed against us. And we really have to get justice for this. How close do you think we are, or are we even moving in the direction of getting justice for these people who knowingly lied to us? Going back to what you were saying about the Great Barrington Declaration, if they didn't know that it was true what they were saying, they wouldn't have tried to shut it down, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
If they were actually concerned about whether the vaccine was safe, they would have followed up on the reports. So clearly their actions, the emails they send, collaborating, they knew what they were doing was wrong. They did it anyway, and they took steps to cover up what they were doing because they knew it was wrong. Are we ever going to get justice for this?
I don't know. I mean, I just saw a very troubling podcast with Rand Paul, who I think has been at the forefront of bringing the hearings you would need to bring.
Right.
He has been all over Tony Fauci in the middle of COVID. Yep. Of course, the big breaking story right now, I think it was just last week, you had a FOIA request that came in that showed that Tony Fauci had seen the data all the way back in 2021, brought it up with Rochelle Walensky and Francis Collins, saying, look at all this data coming out of Israel. Clearly, they all understood that natural immunity, having the infection and having being naturally immune, was better than being vaccinated. And they made a concerted effort to say, don't tell the American public. In fact, we're going to tell you, you have to get vaccinated, even if you've already been infected, because the natural infection isn't as strong. It was a total lie. We now know it was a lie. And you have Rand Paul in the center of it that was, you know, had, you know, Fauci under a microscope talking about gain of function. Where did this virus come from? It sure looks like it came from the Wuhan lab. And we've got FOIA requests showing that we know Fauci was in an email chain with top scientists that were saying this looks like it came from a lab. Yet, you know, I think it was like literally 2 weeks later, those same scientists all write an article saying the only explanation is natural, you know, is a natural source. It can't be lab created. So whatever happened in meetings with Fauci, his finger is in the middle of this, and Rand Paul is all over it. But he's saying publicly right now that it does appear that President Trump does not have a stomach. Someone, Pam Bondi, someone in there is holding back from bringing actual indictments. He said, you know, Bobby Kennedy and I are working together. We want to bring these guys, you know, up on charges. We want to test whether the auto pen should protect Tony Fauci? Can you just give a blanket? We don't know why, but he is immune to any prosecution for all reasons from here to forward. We've never seen anything like that. So you have Rand Paul, you know, drooling over the opportunity. He's got Fauci dead to rights. We've saw Fauci say it wasn't gain of function, yet it sure appears that now that is exactly what was being funded through NIAID. So I think you've got the smoking guns. I think that you've got the right people in place. You know, why is the administration not moving forward to that? I mean, I guess we'd, you know, only President Trump and maybe Pam Bondi knows right now.
Is it the Trump administration, or is it the institutional authority that Fauci still wields? Because I mean, he was the head of his department since the 80s. Like, he had built it around himself, right? So I can understand how people who got their first job from him and have been there for 20 years might want to protect him. Is it the Trump administration's shortfalls, or is it the institutional control that Fauci and his compatriots still wield?
I mean, I don't know. Is there a difference?
I guess not, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I think when you elect someone like President Trump, when you send a Robert Kennedy Jr. in, when you send, you know, I mean, a lot of these guys are coming in as, you know, outsiders. And, you know, I was lucky to be in some of the early meetings as that transition was happening. You know, Bobby had not been confirmed yet, but I was still standing by his side. I worked with him all the way to the point he put his hand on that Bible inside the Oval Office. But, you know, there was a lot of outsiders that were brought in by this administration because they didn't want that sort of corporate capture to affect choices. But, you know, Epstein, which you guys are covering, there's a lot of things we're like, why aren't we following all the way through? I don't know. Yeah. I don't have the answers to that. I'm as sort of shocked by some of this. But I think that constant pressure and ultimately what Robert Kennedy Jr. is doing and what I think is the most important part, it's the most important part of what you do, Harrison, what Alex is doing, what I am doing, we are only here. We are only seeing the changes that are happening because the court of public opinion is now
right.
in charge.
Yeah.
It's our opinions of what's happening. It's our pressure now. It's what we are demanding. So you said, as I sat down here, there's no issue like the vaccine issue. Vaccines is crumbling.
Absolutely.
You know, we would not be here for 50 years from now. I don't think Robert Kennedy Jr.'s HHS secretary for 50 more years if we didn't all go through COVID, if the
right.
pharmaceutical industry and its capture of our government didn't so far overstep its place, if we didn't see how pharma was working with, you know, the WHO, the WEF, and all of these globalist organizations to rob us of our sovereignty, that was a wake-up call. And one of the really cool things of, you know, being around, you know, the Trump team was they saw the same thing we did.
Right.
His not winning that last election, having 4 years to think about what he'd do when he'd come back and watch America plummet and almost burn its constitution in COVID woke this nation up and gave a mandate beyond just a popular vote, a mandate for change to this administration that in many ways we are seeing great action. But, you know, we're pointing out some of the, you know, the things that are annoying. I think so many people would like to see Fauci indicted. I always say this, though. I don't want Robert Kennedy Jr. spending his time trying to get people arrested. I want him changing the system. I want him doing what he's doing. I want him getting the chemicals out of our children's food. I want the lead and the arsenic out of our baby food. I want fluoride out of our water. We're looking at EPA is going to finally do real, you know, investigations into that. You do see a look at glyphosate and, you know, there's two tracks happening. You see an open conversation appears to be happening between EPA and Robert Kennedy Jr. Meanwhile, you've got, you know, the Trump administration pushing Supreme Court to look at possibly giving liability protection. So it's hard to explain all of it.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I know Robert Kennedy Jr. very well, and that guy's heart is as pure as it gets as far as what he's trying to achieve there.
I've said for a while that, like, if you can't trust that guy, you can't trust anybody. Like, he is like, if anybody has dedicated their lives to a movement, if he has been fooling us the whole time, then nobody can be trusted.
Right. Let's just throw ourselves off a cliff.
Yeah. At this point, like, you might as well. But that's such an interesting thing you said about COVID. And again, it's a reminder of why it's important that we do this, because so often the overwhelming power of these conspiracies that we talk about leaves people feeling demoralized. But the fact is, like, they pushed too far. They went too hard. They thought they could get away with it. They thought they'd have us all locked down. I love how Anthony Fauci still to this day refers to this year as COVID year six, as if they were going to reset the calendar based on their operation. And yet what it did was woke so many people up to it and has become a major vector of attack for them that they might not survive with the way that RFK Jr. is going after the vaccine program. The pesticide thing is a whole different thing that I'm concerned about. Yeah. But at least when it comes to vaccines, they went too far. They pushed too far and it woke up humanity to what they were doing. And at the end of the day is going to, you know, contribute to freeing us from their system rather than them succeeding in their operation. I wouldn't have read The Real Anthony Fauci by RFK Jr. If he wasn't ordering me to wear a mask. And that book blew my mind. And I still think about it continuously because that is the rot that RFK Jr. is up against right now. And it is thorough and very well established. So what else is coming up for RFK Jr.? What more surprises do we have? And what do you think is his next big step? Because, again, he really does seem to be chipping away at the vaccine facade and is doing major, major damage to it.
Well, I think he would want me to say he's not doing damage to it. He's just bringing science to it. And he's bringing the opportunity to choose. He isn't destroying the vaccine program. He is cutting the mandate in half is what he just did. Huge, the biggest shift for sure. I would, you know, I think from the pharmaceutical perspective, he's doing damage. But really all he's doing is saying, I'm going to reduce 54 total injections down to about 23 injections. They're saying, oh,
the madman, right, the radical.
It's totally unscientific. That is the same schedule Germany has. It's the schedule Denmark has. So every time they're like, oh my God, you're going to bring back smallpox. You're going to bring back polio. There's no smallpox in Germany or Denmark. No smallpox and polio. And then you'll hear, well, those are totally different nations. They don't have the same population. Well, they have about the same population as Kansas, so why are we forcing mandates on vaccines on Kansas? In fact, they have the same population of almost all of America except for Los Angeles and New York City.
Right.
And those two places are going to vaccinate the living hell out of themselves no matter what Robert Kennedy right. does. So I don't think we have anything to worry about. But ultimately, I do want to point out that he isn't removing vaccines from, you know, existence. He's saying there's no mandate for now. I think it's he's taken from like 11 vaccines down to 6 or 7 that are mandated. And I think for me, it's not going far enough in that I really want to mirror the Denmark schedule, which is they have the right to choose on every single vaccine. It's
right.
the only place where for whatever the powers that be that are in there, he is tiptoeing along. We could get into some of the science. I know why they're worried about removing a mandate from measles vaccine or chickenpox vaccine, because you will see a real uptick in measles and chickenpox, something that I dream of the day that actually becomes acceptable again. Mm. I think we're a healthier society when our children catch chickenpox. We're a healthier society when our children caught the measles. There's many, many studies that show that lower rates of cancer, lower rates of heart disease, all that simply because our immune systems used to be primed right at the time where we were developing it and we were strong enough to handle it. Instead, this vaccine program has manipulated nature, and we're seeing the results of it. As Robert Kennedy Jr. has pointed out, as my film An Inconvenient Study is really getting into, this is the sickest nation of children in the world, certainly in the industrialized world. It's the sickest generation of children we've ever had. We've gone from 12.8% chronic disease in our children in the 1980s, just over 40 years ago, to now we have over 54% of our children have chronic disease. And at the heart of the study, the Henry Ford study, the Center of an Inconvenient Study, my film, I challenged the head of infectious disease at Henry Ford Health, prove me wrong. Do a study comparing health outcomes of vaccinated versus unvaccinated kids. In every health category in that study, it's an unpublished study. He refused to publish it. Henry Ford refused to publish it. They've threatened a lawsuit against me for even putting this film out. So I want to be very careful about my language.
Right.
This is an unpublished study. It's my opinion that the reason they did not publish the study is the results were so incredibly damning for the vaccinated. 2.5 times more likely to have a chronic disease. You were 6 times more likely to have a neurodevelopmental disorder.
Oh, wow.
6 times more likely to have an autoimmune disease if you were vaccinated compared to the unvaccinated. And they do a graph. And remember, this is Henry Ford Health. This is a scientist that in undercover footage that is a part of the film, in a dinner I had with him, he admits, I believe in vaccines. I am the reason we force vaccinate every employee of Henry Ford Health. And so this was a study done by a, you know, a devout, personally stated pro-vaccine scientist. It was not tilted in our direction. If there was a bias, it had to be in the vaccinated. And instead, what they showed is within 10 years, a vaccinated child, 57% of them would have a chronic disease, whereas only 17% would have an, of the unvaccinated would have a chronic disease. So lastly, I think Robert Kennedy Jr. promised to do a study just like this with the data inside of CDC. I think that data was contaminated. They're cleaning that up, and that's what we're waiting for from Robert Kennedy.
We got to get that done. I mean, it should have been done before we ever shot the vaccines into our arms, but better late than never. Del Victory, thank you, sir.
Awesome, man.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and you, what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on methylene blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things. And their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this methylene blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans. And we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP, and it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule that should have 2 hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1. It's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So methylene blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade methylene blue, and this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning, next-level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS, Shilajit. This right here, look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.